Good morning and welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for January 25th. Would you roll call, please?
Commissioner Wyatt?
Here.
Commissioner Christie?
Here.
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Commissioner Malsko? Chairperson Rappa?
Here.
Let it be known that Commissioner Malsko is absent.
Thank you. Would you all join us in the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Before we go to public comment, I would like to let everybody know that there are speaker slips in the back of the room, and if you plan to speak, if you could fill one out for us, it would be very helpful. And also there are staff reports right down here to my left, if anyone has any, would like, are they there?
Oh, I guess they're all gone.
Oh, they're all gone, and you all got them. Okay. And if... Does everyone, if everyone would, we would appreciate it if you're done with whatever item you were interested in, if you could return them up to the front where you picked them up. Thank you very much. This is the time on our agenda for public comment. I do have two requests to speak. The first speaker slip is from Eric Greening, and the second speaker slip is from Michael Wynn. If you'd both step forward, it would be great.
Good morning. I am Eric Greening, and I'm glad to see all your faces. I hope Commissioner Malsko is all right, and I hope his orchards are all right, but I know this is a very difficult time for a lot of folks in agriculture. I noticed that at your last meeting, one of the items was presented by a private consultant acting as staff. No more was said about it. In other words, can we expect this to happen again, to happen repeatedly? If so, then I think we need to look at the staffing issues. The other questions are simply, how does one become a quasi-staff private consultant? Do you invite people to do so, or do they petition for the right to do so? What kind of training or orientation occurs to give them the right to sit there and act as staff? Do they need to take some kind of an oath to recognize that they are working primarily for the public, as the professional county staff does, before they're able to sit there as staff? Basically, my concern is to have anyone just be able to sit in that seat as if they were staff and not be part of the internal culture of staff, that culture of public service that is so obviously there when people who are staff are sitting in those chairs, is of concern to me. And I just wanted to know how it can happen, how people can be qualified to sit in that place, and whether it is going to happen again. I would urge you to have a study session on staffing issues at which questions like this can be answered. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Wynn?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm a chairperson for the Water Resources Advisory Committee. I would add on briefly to Mr. Greening's remarks to say that even elected officials that represent other government agencies are given the same 3 minutes that any other member of the public. So I would add to his concern on the list, how much time are you going to give to people who are serving clients and are not professionals such as yourselves? Moving on. I do want to let you know that in the Board of Supervisors meeting Tuesday this week, they did decide to bring back a question that was dear to your heart, and that is the resources management system. And they are going to bring back the question of whether the Napomo Mesa should be certified level 3 or should remain in the kind of limbo it is now, where it's certified for level 2, recognized for level 3, but the resource capacity study is complete. I most of us assumed that it actually was certified last year, but due to some unfortunate ambiguity in the way it was passed, it's really not perfectly clear. They have instructed staff to come back in 120 days and to bring it to your commission and to the Water Resource Advisory Committee before it goes back to the Board of Supervisors. So you will be seeing it, and we, of course, look forward to your cooperation and input. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Is there anyone?
I have a question for Mr. Wynn, just a point of clarification.
Yes, ma'am.
What is going to be coming to us, the resource capacity study or the question of the RMS and how that's being implemented? And are we going to be asked to be making an interpretation of how to implement the RMS, or are we getting the resource capacity study to review?
My understanding is it will not be the entire resource capacity study for the entire county, but that portion of the water supply that deals with Napomo Mesa. There also were other questions raised about the Paso Robles Basin, and I'm not perfectly clear whether there will be a second bite at that apple or not.
Okay, thank you.
Yes.
Is there anyone else who wishes to address the commission as part of public comment? Anyone from the public?
Commissioner Rapa, I'll address Mr. Wynn and Commissioner Christie's comments after you're through with public comment.
That'd be great. Thank you. Could you state your name, please?
Madam Chairperson, members of the Commission, my name is Jim Hill. I'm president of the Oceano Community Services District Board. One of the items that is on your agenda a little later is dealing with the proposed sale to the state of parklands for the state vehicle recreation area. And I'm not commenting on that particular item today, but what I did want to bring up was the impact on the community of Oceano from the state vehicle recreation area and our concern over the proposed sale. The vehicle recreation area brings great benefit to the people of not only our county, but probably the majority of them from other counties, especially in the Central Valley.
Excuse me, Madam Chair.
Yes, sir.
This seems to be testimony related to an agendized item, and public comment is for items that aren't on the agenda. I would recommend that you ask the speaker to hold his comments until we get to item, I believe it's number two.
Pre-rating for Los Osos, which is, I believe, is supposed to be probably raised to a level three. Our concern in Los Osos is right now is seawater intrusion, not specific to the sewer issue, but to the fact that many of us believe that the continuing of giving building permits to people in the basin is exacerbating the seawater intrusion problem. Now, the M word, or moratorium, is what it really is for building, has not been discussed and has been pretty much avoided for Los Osos. But we are in a seawater intrusion problem there, which is, let's just put it this way, as bad as the wastewater problem in Los Osos. Water codes state that any individual can file a complaint against any property owner that may, in the foreseeable future, or is currently causing degradation of the waters of the state, can be filed by an individual. Now, if we can't get a stop in building permits in Los Osos until we get our seawater intrusion problems taken care of, many of us will think of going that route, filing complaints with the Regional Water Quality Control Board saying these could be future problems for Los Osos due to seawater intrusion caused by people overdrafting the basin. And if we have to go that route, then we will, and we will file these complaints. And that will probably stop building in the basin as a whole. So I just say, before people start thinking that they can go ahead and continue building in Los Osos, just understand that individuals have the right to file these complaints, and we will probably have to do that if the county keeps permitting building within the water basin. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dugan. Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to speak on public comment? Seeing none, Mr. Stevens, you had a Stevenson.
Thank you, Chairman Rappa. Chuck Stevenson, County Planning. Just a comment on what the board did Tuesday relative to RMS. With respect to NAPOMO, the board directed that a resource capacity study certification process be begun. And that process begins with a hearing at the Planning Commission. I then would go back to the Board of Supervisors with your recommendation. Mr. Wynn was correct. We have completed a resource capacity study. That has been done. As you recall, there was a DWR report, and then the county hired a Papadopoulos engineering firm to evaluate that. So the study has been done, but the next step in the process would have been to come through the certification process, and that wasn't completed. So we're coming back to your commission with that. The second thing that the board directed was that Los Osos continue its Level 3 certification process, and that will be coming to your commission next month and then on to the board. And then lastly, there has been an issue raised with water pumping in the east part of Paso Robles, just east of 101, a fairly significant depression. And so the board directed that we come back to them with information about doing a resource capacity study, identifying the cost. And before they actually authorized that, they told us to go come back with some information on what that would cost. So that's how we left it.
Thank you.
I had a question. I'm confused. We come up annually with this annual report we call the RMS report. And it says for traffic and sewage and schools and for all these various communities, we got this 1-2-3 system. Isn't that? Seems like what you're saying is, although it said a 3, we still have to do some more work to make it a 3, or what?
Well, there's a process. The initial stages of the process is that staff gathers information and from various agencies that are responsible for viewing those services, we provide recommendations to the Board of Supervisors. It may be that staff recommends a Level 3, but that is only information until the Board takes steps to certify it. And the first step in that is to do a resource capacity study, which has specific questions to be answered as part of the analysis. That's done. It's brought back to the Board. They and your commission, you would review that and then make a certification that a Level 3 exists, and then you would take steps to mitigate in some manner. There's several steps that could be taken before you might go to a moratorium. But
all this other stuff that's 1 and 2, that's just really just a broad brush informational
thing? The way the RMS is set up, the levels 1, 2, and 3 are sort of estimates of time it would take
to respond to it on the spur of the moment. And we'll report back to your commission at the next meeting staff update, and we will communicate with Mr. Greening.
Thank you.
When I had a question. Somebody, I believe Mr. Greening, said that the staff is paid by the taxpayers, which technically is true, but I was under the impression that your department is largely funded by fees and short billing permit fees and development plan.
We're about 60-65% funded by permit fees, and the rest is by general fund support.
Okay. Now, I had another question for staff, if it would be appropriate to ask.
Why don't we let planning staff updates continue, and maybe your question will be answered, maybe it won't, and then we'll go from that. Is that okay?
Sure.
Oh, Mr. Hogue?
Well, the first thing I wanted to talk to the commission about was it's time for your annual retreat, which was a tradition that we started last year. And we had it in January last year. And so we're, of course, in January now, and we need to plan ahead. And we're looking at the month of March as a possibility of having the retreat. And those of you that have been on the commission for a while know how it operated. Last time, we did it for most of a day at a location away from the board chambers. And intent this time is to probably not go as far away as we did before, mainly for cost savings, because the department is having some revenue shortfall and budget problems this year. Our hope is to possibly have it in the conference rooms that are right outside the board chambers here, and we would still, of course, provide a catered lunch, or the library community room, whatever room is available. We do know what we try to do is avoid a week that there's already a planning commission meeting in, and we were also trying to look to see what days of the week might work. I know one of you has some commitments on Fridays, but with enough advance notice, we can make that work, I guess. We looked at when this room was available on non-planning commission Thursdays, and it's not. We do know it's available on March 16th, which is a Friday, and it occurs in the week between your two regular monthly meetings. So what I'd like to do is plant the seed and see if that works for you, if you could get back to me or to Ellie in the next couple of days so we can plan ahead. And if that date, March 16th, doesn't work, if you could possibly suggest other dates that work for you. So.
Okay. Any other updates?
The other update is to introduce James Caruso, because he's going to give you a status report on the conservation element that came up in response to public comment at the last meeting, and we asked, since Mr. Caruso wasn't available, then if he could come back today and give you that status report.
Thank you. Mr. Caruso?
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, James Caruso, Department of Planning and Building. We've commenced the update of the conservation element of the general plan. As your Commission knows, the conservation element is 32 years old and is in need of updating and revision. The world has moved along since 1974. Having just started about 5 months ago, 4 months ago, one of the main goals of the revision to the document is consolidation. We have several different general plan elements that deal with issues that are usually, as we've discovered, in a jurisdiction's conservation element. These areas are energy, ag resources, soils, air quality, things that right now we have mixed throughout the general plan documents. Ag and open space element is another example. So first thing we've done is taken a look to see how a consolidation effort would proceed, and we've actually produced a document, stripped most of the non-policy language out of the energy element, the ag element, the open space element, and the offshore energy element, because that's the consolidation goal that we have. We're calling that the baseline document, just the raw policies out of those documents, and that is our starting point with the existing policies. And one of the things we've learned is the ag and open space element that was done about 10 years ago, it's not a bad document. It's got some very strong policies in it. It's lacking in some follow-up to the programs, which we also hope to correct through this process. A couple of other things that we're doing is Mr. Stevenson and I will be doing the rounds of the cities in February and March, the city councils, to let them know what we're up to. It's strictly informational. It's a courteous thing group of people who have been involved in the Energy Summit work. Their organization is called Sea Change, and we're very happy that they've asked us to be a part of that effort. And it's going to be rather important because the county has the policy document, the energy section of the new conservation element, where we could actually try to implement the policies that we developed through working with this group. So that's where we are. We still have a long, long row to hoe. We're not expected to go to hearings until probably the end of 2008. It's going to be a 36-month process. Hopefully, we take only the 36 months that we've told the board. And we've just started, and so far, so good. And that's it. Any questions?
Any questions of Mr. Caruso?
Thank you so much.
I think everyone's saying good job. Keep it up.
Well, so far, no controversy yet.
Aha. Okay, thank you. Mr. Hogue, was there anything else under planning staff updates?
That's all I plan to respond to.
Okay, did that answer your question maybe, Bob?
No, okay. Although he did he skirted on it with our annual meeting. And back in 2005, you gave us a list of current study sessions and possible topics.
And actually, we revisited that in April or May of 2006 as well.
Right, but I don't have that document anymore. I wonder if you could at some time give us an updated one prior to our meeting, and therefore we all could say, great, we did a good job on this one. Let's think about, you know, topic A, B, and C. And
we can do that for the Planning Commission retreat and get it out to you ahead of time.
And one of the items that I thought might be useful, last meeting we had a project and there were some issues about visibility and screening, and there was a project that was critically evaluated by at least one commissioner, and she was right, that may or may not have met certain standards. And so as I was at the gym, somebody had been watching TV and says, man, you guys really ought to do something about that. And he says, because that place looks like a castle surrounded by a strip mine. And I thought, well, that's pretty good analysis. So I recall when that project came to us, and it seems to me as I recognized it was going to get landscape screened. And so I'm kind of asking, what happened? Is that project still ongoing and their landscaping isn't in yet, or did we miss the mark, or should maybe this be phased? Because it's looked like a strip mine for a very long time.
There's always a whole lot of detail to these kinds of projects, but the short answer is that it actually hasn't been cleared for final yet. Even though they do have power and they are operating their tasting room, there is outstanding conditions that have yet to be satisfied, and staff will not clear the project until they are. And landscaping is one of the foremost requirements.
Well, that brings up the question, if they haven't been cleared for final, but they're open and operating for business, what incentive do they have to meet their final permit conditions if they're already open?
You know, this is where I feel like I cannot give you an immediate answer, because we're going to need to go back and research all the circumstances. But when there's a temporary occupancy granted, it's usually not the full operation that is in place. It's some increment of operation. And that's where I would need to have staff research the exact status of the project.
Okay. Can you perhaps do that and bring that back at the next meeting?
Sure.
I had one question for staff as well. We have our ag workshop coming up. I think it's one of the meetings in, is it next month? In February, Mr. Hogue?
I'm sorry, I'm writing notes from the prior time.
Sorry.
If I don't write them down,
I'm so sorry.
The prior one if I don't write it down.
Right. I know our ag workshop had been delayed so that we could have a full commission after Commissioner Gibson left. And it's coming up soon, and I understand we're going to be reviewing the commission's top three priorities.
Correct.
My question is, are those the only issues that we're going to discuss, and then the workshop is over, or will the next three priorities be discussed at a future workshop, or how's that going to be handled?
It's entirely at the pleasure of your commission. We're prepared to continue. If you, you know, we're bringing the top three to your commission on the 22nd. We feel that will probably take up the time we have allotted for it.
Okay.
And then if your commission wishes to go to the next rank of policies, you can so direct us to schedule another study session date, and we will do so.
And I don't recall, you may have sent it and I may have forgotten it, but I don't recall seeing how all the ranking shook out. We all submitted our individual priorities.
I gave that to you, and I'll resubmit it again.
If that could be a part of the staff report, that'd be great. So maybe we could talk.
Right. And Sarah was number two.
I don't know. Probably not.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Mouse? Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. And Commissioner Wyatt?
Well, she wasn't.
Yeah. You're. Oh, right. Great. Okay. Now that we've dispensed with two of our consent agenda items, I will be stepping down on A1. I have a conflict of interest. And the vice chairperson will be taking over the meeting.
Okay, this is a general plan conformity report, and perhaps, Mr. Hogue, you could explain this process, because I know it's somewhat confusing. Has been to us, and I'm sure it is to the public.
Yes, thank you, Commissioner Rose, and it's timely because we have two different types of actions requested on general plan conformity reports today. This is the normal one. This is the first time that the conformity report has appeared on your agenda, and under the county's framework for planning, it implements California Government Code Section 65402, and our process is that we get in a request from a public agency to review their proposed sale, acquisition, or development of property for conformance with the general plan. And the state law says that we have 40 days to do it, and our framework for planning gives us assigns that responsibility to the planning department to make the initial determination. Once the determination is reached, then it's placed on a planning commission consent agenda to provide public notice. And the action before your commission at that time is to receive and file. Now, there is also the ability to appeal the staff's decision. And if that appeal occurs, then a separate hearing date is set, and that's when the planning commission can actually review the determination and either agree with it or reach a different conclusion. And that is what's happening with items 2 and 3 today, is those conformity reports, that's on Oceano Dunes and on the Los Osos sewer plant sites, have been appealed. They've already appeared on your agenda as receive and file items. There has been appeals, and there is appeal hearing scheduled before your commission today. And we'll talk a little bit more about Los Osos in a second, because there's a wrinkle on that. But back to the one before you on consent agenda, the Cambria sites, that is a staff determination that's on your consent agenda for providing public notice and being received and filed. So the other thing that's important to note is that although the government code does require public agencies that are proposing sale, acquisition, or development of public property to request a general plan conformity determination, the determination reached by the appropriate agency, in this case the county, is advisory only. It does not actually restrict the ability of the requesting agency to go forward with whatever the original action is. And often, the original action, in this case, a sale of property, will be subject to a decision by the board in a hearing format in a public meeting later. And that's when the determination of conformity to the general plan is presented to them as supporting information to assist them in their decision to take the actual action or not, in this case, transfer the property to the Cambria CSD. So that's the one you have before you right now is receive and file. The two that are coming up later are actual public hearings, and you can weigh the public testimony, weigh the staff report, and make a decision as to whether you agree with the original determination.
Now, if a citizen here today didn't agree with that general plan conformity, you mentioned appeal, how would they make that happen?
They would file an appeal within the required timelines on a form. They would pay a fee unless it's a coastal appealable issue, in which case there is no fee. There would be the determination would be held in advance, the one that was reached by staff. There would then be a subsequent public hearing scheduled before your planning commission, like we're doing for Oceano Dunes and Los Osos Sewer.
Okay, one other question. I see the determination date listed in my staff report was December the 10th, and we're used to seeing them, you know, the day before or something like that. So are you telling us the appeal period has run out?
I'm going to turn it over to staff at this point to talk about that.
All right. I guess we get a little mini staff report here.
He's looking at me, so I'll step up. This is Matt Jansen, planning staff. Good morning. We try real hard to get the general...
In today's agenda, and hearing Mr. Hogue's explanation just now, that the planning commission agenda item on the consent agenda serves as the public notice, and that the public can appeal based on what we do today, which is what, apparently other entities have done. And if somebody doesn't agree today that this action is in conformity with the general plan, they can appeal it, and it will come back to us at a later date as an agendized item. But you just said something different. You just said what we've been saying all along, that the appeal period has run, and now it's before us. So which is it?
Well, I realize it's a difficult issue, but I'll try my best to get through it one more time. What happens on the determination date, in this case it was December 10th, as it's listed in the upper left-hand corner of the staff report, is that the planning director made a determination whether it was in conformity or not.
Yes.
On that date, a letter was sent to the requesting party that initiated a 14-day period for that party to appeal the determination or not.
Now, but no other member of the public.
I agree. There is no public notice formally set up in our framework or in the general plan that requires that to occur. And I realize they're a tad empty, the words I'm using, but we try really hard. It's not required, but we try really hard, and we've been succeeding more often than not lately since your commission has become more and more concerned about it, that we try to get these to you as receive and file prior to the expiration of that appeal period. Now, you have two items today that were appealed, and so you get to have full discretion over that general plan conformity determination. But let's remember that it's not an action. It's an advisory report only as to whether it's in conformity or not. The action, and in this case, the action is actually being taken by a body that sits in this room, so we're lucky that the action is taken by a local body, and that is really the opportunity for the public to give input on whether the action should be taken or not the general plan conformity process. I know that doesn't help the frustration, but that is really how it works. That's what the code's set up.
Going back to today's issue, what if somebody, a citizen, and we have several speaker slips, mm-hmm. I suspect they may disagree with this conformity. So where are they left with? I understand what you're saying about the day that these things are going to be sold or not. That appears on the Board of Supervisors agenda, and people get to tell their representatives at that point. But if somebody has down a little bit lower level says, no, this, in my opinion, doesn't conform to the general plan, well, how do they get to say anything for this issue?
Well, at this point, on this particular project, their best bet is to write a letter to the agency that's going to take the action, and that's the Board of Supervisors. If we want to start talking about when this item is going to be coming before them, then I would ask that someone from General Services come to the lectern and speak about that specific issue. So I realize this is a difficult issue. I don't think we're going to solve it this morning like we haven't solved it in the past, but perhaps we need to agendize it as a separate topic to get into detail on and to maybe look at some possible changes.
Yeah, and I apologize. I did not intend to come off as shooting the messenger. I know that you did not create this conundrum, Mr. Jensen. I'm just, the frustration over this has built for me over the years. And I'm just going to say for the record that I don't think that we are interpreting this section of the general plan correctly. I don't think we need to do it this way. Granted, we have always done it this way, and maybe it hasn't been an issue, but I think it would be a simple thing to simply change our procedures. I don't think we would need a general plan amendment or any kind of regulatory change. I think we could just do it differently and serve the public much, much better as a result, and allow us to do our work in a more efficient manner. So that's I heartily agree we need to agendize this for a discussion. Maybe it could be at the retreat. Maybe it could, we can talk about where would be an appropriate place to do it. But please, we have got to deal with this because it's just crazy. The way it works now is crazy. It makes no sense, and there's no need to do it this way anymore.
Before Matt leaves the podium, is there any more staff report? Because
well, Can I
explain what this item is?
Can I respond to Commissioner Christie's comment real quickly? As it turns out, on the list of study session items your commission's already identified is the general plan conforming report.
Yay! Thank you for that, Mr. Holmes.
And we do plan to bring it to your commission. Our perception, you actually priority ranked issues, and ag issues and some others were higher ranked, but we haven't forgotten about it, and it will come. And actually, I have some ideas to address the concern that,
terrific,
that is
being we'll be
expressed, but they will require ordinance amendments.
Okay.
And particularly in the coastal zone, you know that that involves, you know, extra process and takes longer. But we need to get started on it, you know, and we need to take the first step. So we can talk about that at the appropriate time, but I haven't forgotten that we have a study. We owe you a study session on that issue.
Great.
Okay.
Commissioner Rose, I don't have a staff report. We don't, as you know, we don't normally do staff reports on conformity reports, but if you have questions about this particular project, Murray Wilson is here from our staff, and Linda Van Fleet from General Services is here, and also Tammy Rudock, I think, might still be here from CCSD, so we have quite a few people here to answer questions about this particular project if you have them.
Meters available through the Community Services District, which could be transferred to parcels, two of the four that have been identified. In a nutshell, that is the project as proposed. County planning staff was charged with determining whether that transfer was in conformity with the general plan, and at this time we have determined so.
Thank you. Anyone else from staff or the Community Services District would wish to address it prior to hearing public testimony?
Excuse me. Just while people may be coming up, I'd just like to announce that I had a couple of ex parte contacts. Is now the appropriate time?
Yeah, now would be a super time.
Okay. I did just attend a meeting between the CCSD and County General Services in 2006 regarding this transfer, possible transfer at the time. And I did speak to Tammy Rudock, the CCSD general manager, last night by phone.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the public hearing then, the first speaker I have is Ken Prohaska, followed by Erwin O'Hannison. If Ken could take one speaker slip and Erwin, or speaker podium, and Erwin the other.
Okay. Oh, I see I have a countdown meter here.
You bet. I'm pushing it.
Thank you for letting me have this opportunity to speak. I do want to say that I appreciate Commissioner Rappa's recusing herself from this because of her conflict of interest. I appreciate Commissioner Christie taking the side of the public that we ought to have an opportunity to deal with this. Let me speak to the four development lots that are in this transfer, if you will. While I don't dispute that they, in fact, conform to the general plan as it exists today, one of those development lots is in Special Projects Area 2 that, under the updated general plan, you cannot transfer a water meter to that property in Special Projects Area 2. This property in Special Projects Area 2 is a 25 by 70 piece of property, so it's already kind of substandard. I will say, and this is probably not politically correct, but Habitat for Humanity has been out taking site measurements to build on that 25 by 70 piece of property and have told the neighbors that they have a meter they can move to it. And as I say, when the new updated general plan comes in, you cannot move a meter into Special Projects Area 2. And I just wanted to bring that up. I don't know whether I can appeal. You said my appeal process is off. I will be bringing this up as well to the Board of Supervisors when that meeting comes in, because you told me this wasn't necessarily a place where you could make any change to this. My suggestion would be to drop that one lot because it's violating the spirit, if not the law, as it exists right now, given that you already have a draft plan that will prohibit the transfer of a meter to that lot that does not currently have a meter on it. So I thank you for that opportunity, and I'll defer to Erwin.
Thank you.
Unless you have any questions. I'm sorry, I should always ask that.
Can you just describe for us where and what is Special Project Area 2?
Special Project Area 2, sitting up on the top of the World Lodge Hill area, where it's designated as a special projects area because it's a Highway 1 viewshed, okay? And it's a relatively small area. It's I couldn't tell you the exact dimensions of it, but it's designated Special Projects Area 2 because of the Highway 1 viewshed and the steep hillside. And as it turns out, this particular lot doesn't have any clearance required. I think that's one of the reasons somebody's looking at it is, oh, this would be easy to go in and build. I don't have to clear any shrub or anything. Okay, but as I say, your new plan says I can't transfer a meter into it.
Thank you.
And I think somebody's trying to get in before that plan goes into effect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Excuse me, Mr. Prisahaska, could you tell us which street address, which lot that is, please, it's, that you're referring to?
You want the parcel number or the street? I don't know if it has a street address. It's on Hudson Avenue.
Hudson Avenue.
And the parcel number is, I think it's 024-242-25.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Irwin, followed by Richard Hawley.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the Commission. My name is Irwin Oneshin. Our home is at 1990 Dorking Avenue in Cambria. It is across from one of the four lots that have been chosen for development for two home sites. It's a little different for me today, and I want to thank you for your activity and working on the Planning Commission. It's a little different for me. I have served 32 years with the City of Kingsburg as a Planning Commission, the last 20 as chairperson, and usually on the other side of the podium. But I can appreciate and I appreciate the job you do. Also a civil engineer for Fresno County Public Works for 46 years and a consultant to the Council of Governments, Fresno County, for 15 years. We built our home 13 years ago in Cambria, and we are going to be moving over full-time very shortly. I'd like to echo Commissioner Christie's comments. We have not been noticed. This meeting was only through someone in the community driving up and looking at the parcel. And I was out working in the yard and went over and asked them what was going on. Donate them to Green Space. I talked to Rick just this week, and he has records of contacting the county on that parcel. They are also a nonprofit organization. I feel that the those lots should go to Green Space. They have a 50-foot lot now. It is adjacent just north of their existing lots. That space is being used. They have built benches in there. I know I go down and clean those benches off. People do walk their dogs and walk in the area. It's a place they stop. They rest there. I've met a lot of people from all around the country, a author from Brazil. I've owned property in the area for almost 40 years. I hopefully that you would give me a few more minutes.
3 minutes is the limit, sir. Any concluding remark there?
Yes. If you look at your land use map, which I did, about one quarter to one third of the area in the urbanized area is on Lodge Hill. I feel that that expansion of green spaces would provide a passive recreational area, and I think that would be a better use for that area. There are some other things that the staff report as far as what's on the lot now.
So your time is up, and I thank you for your input.
You'll
have the opportunity at the Board of Supervisors to make those points, but they'll probably give you 3 minutes too.
What I've always done before in our city, if it isn't redundant, we don't hold them to a time limit. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hawley, followed by Adam Hill.
Hello. My name is Richard Hawley. I'm a resident of Cambria and also the executive director of Green Space, the Cambria Land Trust. This particular lot on Dorking Avenue, we've been trying to buy since 1994, and we've offered to pay money for it, not just have it donated to us. And we've continually to get stonewalled by the county to put these lots into permanent protection. And I really wish that this board would consider taking this one lot and giving it to Green Space to put it in protection. And also want to bring to your attention that the block that this lot sits on is very high quality Monterey pine forest. There's only two houses on the entire block. It's a large block. It's adjacent to special project area number one and could easily be called an extension of a wildlife corridor running through there. But another thing to consider is that giving lots to the CCSD at this time, you may want to look at their open space overlay and how they protect these lots. I know the county did a study on some of the lots that have been retired, and I think your own study says that there's 22 of these retired lots that have buildings on them now. So that's not in the spirit of protecting this open space, and I think the covenant that if lots are given to the CSD, they need to be tightened up considerably. I also want to encourage this whole idea of affordable housing, and I'm wondering why only 4 lots out of the 14 have been designated for affordable housing, when maybe more could fall into that category. And lastly, I want to bring up the idea of this water meters. We are in a moratorium. I have no idea where these water meters are coming from, and I think someone should ask that question. Water meters that are on the open market now are worth about $400,000. And you can't just invent a water meter to give to someone or to sell to someone. And unless it's a really bona fide water meter that's been identified, and it's in the pipeline. Thank you.
Thank you.
Question for Mr. Hawley. The Dorking lot that you and the previous speaker referred to, is that one of the 4 lots that's been identified as potentially buildable for affordable housing, or is that one of the remaining 10 lots that are going for open space?
I think that's a lot that's been identified for affordable housing.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hill, and that's the last speaker slip I have. Mr. Hill.
Morning. Adam Hill from Grover Beach. Reading the staff report, it shows that there are 4 lots that have been identified for affordable housing, but the staff is recommending that only 2 of them be zoned for that. I strongly urge this commission to recommend to the board that all 4 lots be used for affordable housing. We all know the problem that exists in our county. We should never let an opportunity to develop.
I do see one.
Good morning, Commission. I'm Linda Van Fleet with the Department of General Services. Just going in order of some of the comments, Mr. Prochaska suggested that that the lot on Hudson be removed from the list because it does not qualify for moving a water meter to it. I just want to tell you that the contract that has been developed to this point, transfer agreement is titled, does not specify to the CCSD how to get water to the lots. In identifying the 4 properties, we worked with planning to determine by planning standards which properties were most likely to be able to be developed into affordable housing. And we are not giving direction to the CCSD as to how to accomplish that. I understand the CCSD has, or Habitat for Humanity has 2 EUs that are called. That's equivalent units for water. And that means that they could transfer them to these lots. If that is the only capacity in which water can be placed on any of these 4 properties, then that would limit it to only 2. But we are leaving that in the hands of the CCSD. We are not directing them on how this is accomplished. They have their ordinances, and it is a separate level from the ordinances of planning. Regarding Mr. Ohanesian's comments, he lives across the street from the Dorking property. Yes, I did discuss with Mr. Ohanesian in February last year his interest in acquiring the property. Since we needed to merge the property by direction of the board, he did not qualify as a contiguous neighbor to accomplish a merger. And it is, I understand from planning, not accurate that the lot line goes to the middle. does not qualify as a contiguous parcel because these are recorded streets on the original recorded map.
Ms. Van Fleet, before you leave the Dorking lot, we heard from, and perhaps you were going to get to that in your next answer, but we heard from Mr. Hawley that Green Space does own contiguous lots.
Yes.
We were just handed a letter dated 1994, two letters actually, the first of which was dated 1994, the second of which was dated 2000, regarding Green Space's interest in acquiring that lot. Since they are contiguous neighbors, why has General Services not proceeded with a sale of that lot?
I'm unaware of any request. Was it directed to General Services?
The 94 letter is directed to Curtis Song, property manager, County Government Center, and copied to Supervisor Laurent, supervisor at the time. The second letter is dated December 5th, 2000, addressed to Carolyn Madalena, Department of General Services.
I'm unaware of those requests. I was not with Department of General Services at the time.
Maybe you could touch base with the Mr. Hawley after, and I'm sure you have a copy for you.
Yes, I would like to do that.
Okay.
When Mr. Onesian approached General Services about making the purchase, I personally spoke with him. I suggested, since he wasn't contiguous, that he contact Green Space, that we would be happy to work with Green Space, and that we would have a merger requirement with their adjacent lot. We were not contacted by Green Space after that recommendation, and I thought it was a great idea, and I'm sorry it didn't happen. And I can't speak to things that happened before that I was involved in.
Could General Services, I understand there's not a problem if exchange of properties between public agencies, but is General Services constrained in any way to give a property to a private entity such as a 501c3? Is that considered a gift of public funds, or do we have some guidelines about how that could take place?
My understanding is that there are guidelines that the purpose of the donation or a less than fair market transaction are limited based on the intended purpose of that transfer.
Okay, thank you.
Affordable housing, for example, is one that a less than fair market transaction is allowed.
Or open space for general public use would qualify as well?
That's also my understanding.
Thank you.
Perhaps council.
Okay, moving right along.
Why aren't we maximizing that opportunity? We heard from staff that the CSD has two water meters, but we heard from some later testimony that it's not the CSD, it's Habitat for Humanity who has two water meters. So could somebody clarify where these water meters are coming from?
I believe we have an expert in the field coming to the microphone.
Excuse me for my voice. I'm Tammy Rudock, General Manager for the CCSD. The two EDUs that are currently allocated to the Habitat for Humanity are on a parcel that they currently own, that they're having some trouble with constructing two affordable housing homes. They've been working with us for over 2 years diligently to try to locate some lots so that there can be an exchange.
So none of these meters are coming from the services district?
No, they have had these allocations for years.
Okay. I recall the services district in the update that we did recently for the Cambria plan, wasn't there some exemption for affordable housing units? Isn't there a certain number of meters that the CSD has sort of in stock that aren't being used because no affordable, an equal number of affordable proposals are not coming forward?
Well, actually, those last two EDUs to the Habitat for Humanity were the last ones remaining on an affordable housing list the district
okay.
has to have. There is some current legislation that our district council is reviewing with regard to how to allocate water to affordable housing projects.
Okay, so those two units basically exhaust the list.
They did.
Okay, so my next question is, we've been hearing all this, two units or two parcel stuff, but on page A19, there it says that the property to be transferred would qualify for an exemption for up to three single-family residences. So is that a typo, or are one of these parcels going to be eligible for two dwelling units, or should we really be talking about three individual parcels?
Maybe I can give you a quick answer to that. That's simply indicating what that Class 3 exemption is. It doesn't mean that the project is actually doing up to three residences. It means that the...
Ah, okay. So it falls within the threshold for the exemption.
Yes.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. The last issue that I think needs to be discussed goes to the point that Mr. Hawley made about the structures that have been built on parcels that have been designated open space. And when I first was reading this report, I said, you know, why two, not four? And the second question was, if the other lots are going for open space, why is the county not restricting those lots with a conservation easement before they go forward? Why are we deferring the conservation easement to another entity later in the process? And then as I was reading through the rest of my staff report on another item, page 216, I came across the open space policy number 5, which is very clear. I'm bringing this up because I don't think this proposal is currently consistent with the general plan. Open space goal number 2 says, for properties acquired by the county through tax default that contain open space resources, the county should either retain ownership or protect the open space resource through easements or other mechanisms and then offer for sale. So it sounds to me that according to our own general plan, the county is required to record the open space easement before the properties get transferred. And I think that is by far the preferable route to go, because if the CSD's standard open space easement is actually allowing structures to get built on these parcels after they've supposedly been protected, I, as a planning commissioner, would like to see the terms of those conservation easements to make sure that they're, you know, they're written in a way that they're enforceable to actually protect those properties. Does staff have a response to that?
I'm Murray Wilson, planning staff. I think Linda will probably be able to go into the best detail on this in regards to the contract that is in a draft state, which will go to the board on a tentative date of the 27th. So I'll pass it on to Linda to make those comments.
The 27th of what?
February.
February.
Linda Van Fleet, General Services. I believe the reason that we did not restrict these properties in advance is the fact that we did not know exactly which ones to restrict. We certainly know that 10 of them, without mm-hmm. a doubt, would be mm-hmm. open space. And we could identify what language needed to be included. We actually gave options.
A viewshed area that this commission has previously determined is more appropriate for protecting for its visual resources, which leaves us two lots for 2 meters. So what I propose we do is not receive and file this today, because it is, in fact, not consistent with our general plan, specifically open space policy number 5, and ask staff to take this back and designate the two parcels that aren't in contention as the affordable housing parcels and record a conservation easement or come up with language of a deed restriction for protection of the remaining 12 parcels.
May I, Commissioner Christie? There aren't two remaining that would qualify. That is because the parcel on Romney is located in Special Projects Area Number 1. And it's my understanding, unfortunately Tammy Rudock had to leave, that already is against the ordinance of the CCSD to transfer.
Please.
Okay, well,
testimony has been closed. Let the staff attend to it. Thank you.
Let me make sure that I am quoting which special project area that property is located in. It's an SPA number 1. And it's my understanding that they
that they could not transfer water to that lot.
So why was it identified as one of the four parcels that was buildable?
Because we were not telling them how to accomplish the affordable housing element or how to place water on those lots.
But you said you worked with county staff to determine the potential buildability of those lots, and I would imagine that county staff, if there had been a prohibition against a water transfer, would have, if it was a special project area that's designated in the general plan, they would have caught that, or I don't know, maybe they wouldn't, but...
Murray Wilson, planning staff. The special project area requirement for not being able to transfer a meter to those parcels is in the update, which is in a draft format.
It's in the update.
The requirement that would not allow, which Linda was just speaking to, the water meter to be transferred to the parcel is actually a CCSD requirement. So it's not in conformity with their ordinance, but transferring a parcel to that would be in conformity with the general plan of the county.
But it would create an inconsistency within the CSD's
correct
guidelines.
Okay, let's try to move this along here.
Okay. Well,
thank you. I would like to question for County Council. Ms. Christie has made an argument that this is in conflict with Open Space Policy 5. Obviously, that's a judgment call, but assuming that it is, where are we left with? We're going to receive and file something that we may believe that is not, in fact, in conformance with our general plan?
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. I think as was pointed out at the beginning of this item, it's not really within the Planning Commission's jurisdiction to do anything about it.
Which is insane! It's insane!
That's got to be stupid.
Whether that be a good or bad thing, it was maybe for us to decide, but... clearly, what we've heard this morning is that the Board of Supervisors has to take action on this in a public hearing that apparently is currently set for February 27th, I think I heard. The Planning Commission is not restricted in any way from attempting to weigh in on that proceeding, from allowing the Board of Supervisors to know exactly what you think they ought to be doing or ought not to be doing. You can do that. I think it's probably best if you want to craft a letter or something like that to send to them, that you put an item on your agenda for a future meeting, because I believe you will have time to do that and get it to them within time for them to receive and hear it. That way, anyone who's interested in coming here and talking about the item would have noticed that you intended to do that. I don't think that this is something that the Planning Commission can act on its own, other than as another advocacy voice to the Board of Supervisors.
Tim, we have to take an action today. One of us has to make a motion to receive and file, and a majority of us have to support that motion. We have to take an action. If we do not receive and file this report, what happens?
I don't think anything happens. It's been presented to you. The way the ordinance is set up, it's supposed to be presented to you, and it has been. And if you don't receive it and you don't file it, I don't think anything will happen.
Then
it would still go to the Board of Supervisors
with
a report that said the Planning Commission refused to receive and file this because they disagreed with the Planning Director's determination that it conforms to the general plan.
We could do that.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I'm prepared to make a motion.
Let's do that.
My district.
And you guys are a little slow here on this one. I'm not sure I'm set up to challenge the system on my second meeting.
Okay, then.
Although I hear some cause. could we just, staff, come back to us with anything here?
I'd actually like to make a motion. I'd like to move that
some of these concerns in a letter, if that's within our purview. Sure, I would make that motion that we do so.
Or perhaps the suggestion that had been made earlier that the two lots in question separated from the two lots
that would be buildable, to clarify the buildable lots and look into the possible merger with the green space lots.
We have a motion on the floor. Do we have a second for that?
Second.
Okay, now... reaching for discussion on that. To me, I think we ought to stay within what the Planning Commission does. Looks like we're trying to get in a lot of Board of Supervisors issues. They're very valid issues, but we ain't the board. I think our expertise would be better served in whipping up a letter saying that this does or does not conform to Open Space Policy 5. It does or does not conform to the proposed Cambria San Simeon Area Plan update and let that go forward, not tell the board what they ought to do about stuff that we really don't have purview over. We are considered to be experts on what the general plan has to say.
Isn't that what we're proposing, Bob? That we would
well, you
write
are,
the letter?
But Ms. Christie's trying to add a little bit more about two lots or four lots, and you know.
I was just trying to make some helpful suggestions because I turned that question completely around. You're right, we're not the Board of Supervisors, but the Board of Supervisors isn't the Planning Commission. I can virtually guarantee you that they have never spent as much time discussing any land use decision, certainly any controversial land use decision, at the board as we do at the Planning Commission. You know, I hate to say it, but we just had, because this is our focus and this is our specialty, we take greater interest in these items than the board does by and large. And so when something comes up like this that has what I think is a pretty glaring deficiency and a fairly straightforward resolution, I think it's incumbent upon us in our advisory capacity, which granted that's what this particular item is. We would simply be giving advice to the board. I think they'd be well served by that advice.
Okay. Could you restate the motion just so we're all clear on what it is?
Well, the motion would be that we write a letter to the board expressing our concerns about the specific issues of this project.
Okay.
Does that cover your...
And specifically, and why we found that it was not consistent with the general plan. Because it's inconsistent with Open Space Policy 5 and potentially inconsistent with the update and also include our suggested solution. Is that...
Yes, indeed.
Adequately? Okay.
And is there a meeting that we can do this at so she could make it part of her motion?
The agenda for February... You got two more meetings before that date, February 8th and February 22nd. The agenda for February 8th has already gone out.
And it looks pretty sparse. I think we got room there.
Yeah. Well, we could do a addendum to the agenda because it's not something that requires special public notice. It's just the normal Brown Act noticing requirement. So we could add it to the agenda, but we'd have to do it as an addendum. The addendum won't be posted on the website like the regular agenda, and we could get some criticism that it isn't as widely noticed as it should be, although we would have met all legal requirements.
Mr. Hoag, I don't know that our letter necessarily needs to come back to this commission.
Yes, it does.
Get written and go forward.
You need to discuss the contents and approve the letter in a public meeting. Isn't that correct, counsel?
Yeah, I think particularly given the degree of unclarity there is about exactly what it's going to say.
Right, because I'm agreeing with the first two points, but not the last one. You know, yeah. Open space policy... the 5 and the upcoming update. I sounds like there's a good argument for that. I don't think there's a good argument for the next one, but then again, I haven't heard it all yet.
Okay. What is the third one that you're concerned with, Bob? The third?
What we ought to do with two lots or four lots.
He doesn't want us to give advice on the solution, basically. Okay. He just wants us to limit our discussion to why it's not consistent with the general plan.
Right. And, okay.
I think the proper approach is to direct staff to schedule this as a discussion item for the February 8th agenda. Then your commission should come prepared to give staff specific directions to what the letter should say. Then we could prepare that for the chairman's subsequent, or in this case, vice chairman's subsequent signature and forwarding on to the board. And the time frames will be very tight.
Could staff trail this item or take a tentative motion, and could staff come back with a letter at the end of the meeting today? I mean, I could write that letter on my lunch hour, basically.
No. I think what I'm hearing counsel saying is the letter, sending the letter is an item that needs to be specifically identified as a discussion item on the Planning Commission agenda. And that's why we need to continue it. Is that correct?
I think that would be useful because as we've already got an issue with whether or not people in the community have had adequate notice about the Planning Commission's involvement and the item in general, I think if we had it at a separate meeting, it would provide.
I'd like to reconvene the Planning Commission meeting at this time. Would the clerk please introduce Mr. Hoag? I'm sorry, looking right at you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You caught the significance of my look.
I did.
Before you go on to the first hearing item, I wanted to mention that we did receive a request for continuance for the agenda item number 3, which is the appeal of the general plan conformity report for the Los Osos sewer sites from the Los Osos Community Services District. The Los Osos CSD has submitted a letter, a request in writing, requesting continuance of the item. They actually requested a date that is not a Planning Commission meeting. They requested April 20th, 2007. We've identified that actually the closest available meeting date that you're really having is May 3rd, 2007. So I wanted to make sure that the public was aware that there is a request for continuance from the requesting agency, from the agency that actually originally requested the conformity report. It's at the pleasure of your commission whether you choose to grant that continuance or not. If your commission is inclined to grant it, my suggestion would be that you might want to take that up now so people don't have to, you know, sit in the audience or plan their days accordingly. They can do something else. What you might want to do is ask if there's anyone in the audience that cannot come back and testify on this item on May 3rd. And if you wanted, you could take their testimony. If it looks like there's a lot of those individuals, then I would suggest that you just hold off on acting on the continuance request until the item comes up in its normal order.
Thank you. And the date that this item might come back to us would be February?
No, May.
May.
May 3rd.
May 3rd.
Which, if you'll recall, is the rescheduled date for the second meeting in April because we had to move that.
Great. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hogue. Do we have people who've come to testify today on item number 3, which is the appeal of the Los Osos Community Services District? Do we have anyone here who's come to speak on that that cannot come back on May 3rd or would prefer to testify today? Seeing none, I would bring it back to the commission.
Move to continue item number 3 till May the 3rd.
It's been moved and seconded. And did. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Chairperson Rapa?
Yes. All right, thank you. Would the Secretary please introduce item number 1.
Item 1 is a continued hearing to consider requests by the County of San Luis Obispo for land use element and land use ordinance amendment to amend portions of the South County Area Plan. It's county file number G020017L. James Lopes, project manager.
Thank you. Chairman Rapa, Chuck Stevenson, Division Manager, Long Range Planning. Jim Lopes will make the presentation in just a moment, but I thought since the time of our last meeting, it might be useful to provide a little bit of background to you, why we're here, what is a design plan, just as a little refresher. The West TEF Corridor Design Plan really started as a program in the South County Area Plan many years ago. It's one of those items that as the community goes through a community plan update, identifies certain tasks that are beyond the scope of the plan but would be implemented later on at a future date when funding might be available. And this is one of those elements, one of those programs. You'll recall we've already done one component of that, which was the Old Town Design and Circulation Plan. That was adopted. And and we have actually done a number of these in most of the other communities in the county. This is the second one that we're doing in the Pomo, and this happens to be for the west side of 101. Design plans serve more than one purpose. In this case, a circulation component as well. So while it has architectural design guidelines that will guide future development, it also serves a purpose as a precursor, if you will, for future funding opportunities that might come along through state or federal grants. For example, we're looking at some street improvements that are going to be necessary for TEF Street in the future in order to maintain operational standards, improve pedestrian access, and those kind of things. Those are the kinds of components that are often eligible for state and federal transportation funding. in order to be competitive for those kinds of grants that will come up in the future, it's always best to have a
It is an area that is a central part of the community. It's an area of large lots with commercial retail, or in this map showing CR, an office and professional, or O/P in this diagram. It also includes a slim corridor of land, which is meant to identify just the right-of-way, but we had to, we maybe captured too much area, as you noted from the staff report. And that area is in residential single-family recreation and public facility zones. A good portion of the project area is in the Central Business District. That area has been developed with some large-scale, or I guess large-scale shopping centers, a Long's and a Vons and a Save-On drugstore. And those projects were done in, you know, a suburban shopping center style. And therefore, some of the concern from the community came forward that this area really needed to be more pedestrian-friendly and not just a suburban shopping environment, as you see on the overhead. You can also see from the aerial that there are vacant properties in the area, and some of those are in process or have actually had projects reviewed. To the north is an area owned by Newman, George Newman, and that project has, I think, been coming forward. Shapiro is another site we'll look at briefly in this corner. And also a project over here we'll look at is by Flatley. All three of these projects have been done with the intent of trying to meet the draft design plan. So there's been interest in the design plan and support from the project developers during this time. Existing conditions in the corridor is that this is a four-lane plus center turn lane major arterial, West Heft. It has a very open appearance. It has a backdrop of the Timitati Ridge seen in the upper left corner. And it has a variety of vacant properties and just a variety of different street edge improvements. What we found from workshops and from working with our design committee is that people really want to see more of a pedestrian environment that is decorative, inviting, attractive, engaging, and has features that really create more interest than just a simple sidewalk. So the design plan proposes streetscape principles and standards for those kinds of things, for street furniture, landscaping, gathering spaces, landscape median, and crosswalks. On streets other than West Heft, there's a continuing interest in that as well as having perhaps more lanes between properties, pedestrian linkages, grid pattern of streets, and traffic calming measures. The design plan has a circulation chapter that is somewhat in-depth about West Heft Street. There was a report done by TPG consultants that provided guidance for improvements in the area to alleviate traffic congestion. So the design plan is meant to be the document in the general plan that will carry forward those recommendations and those improvements. And that's an important aspect of the plan. The circulation plan for the area, carrying forward from that circulation chapter, does show West Heft Street with a divided median with landscaping in the wider parts and a new parallel street to Heft Street that would connect to an extension of Mary Avenue that would swing around, connect with Hill coming in from the west, and then continue on out to South Frontage, where it would continue on to a new on-ramp to Highway 101. So this is a kind of an involved circulation plan. There would be an extension of Bloom from Hill across down to the project area and to West Heft, and then past that on up to an extension of Primrose Lane. So access would be enhanced to the downtown from these neighborhoods to the north and south. The West Heft design is proposed to have a landscape median, as I mentioned, as well as landscape parkways next to the street, because there isn't any street parking on West Heft. None is planned. The parkway is meant to then be a buffer between all that traffic on West Heft and pedestrians in the corridor. Moving on to some of the design and architecture and site planning proposals, this is a set of basic principles to try and achieve in the design plan. Pedestrian activity is encouraged, obviously. The proposal that we have now is for a 10-foot wide park. Third floor, that be set back 20 feet along the site frontages. In side sites, that setback would not apply. Architectural styles would be a variety, but be limited so that some other styles would not be allowed, such as modernist or avant-garde styles. The design guidance in the design plan is a set of standards. They're discretionary standards that would be administered through a minor use permit, similar to other communities in the county. Landscaping, signs, and lighting are addressed in the design plan, as well as signs and lights. Streetscape standards are also in the design plan for the frontage improvements along streets, either with private or public development. And these features are addressed. There's an implementation chapter with several things to do, as Chuck Stevenson mentioned. The need is to start doing streetscape planning so that more specific plans can be done that would qualify then for grant approvals. In the environmental review, the mitigated negative declaration that's proposed, the initial study found that impacts could be significant regarding visual impacts along West Tech in the view of the Timitati Ridge to the east. Cultural resources could be affected, as well as any residential uses could be affected by the existing and projected noise in the area. So there are three standards proposed in the design in the public hearing draft that include requirements for studies that will identify the specific impacts to proposed projects in the future. And that's in accordance with this being a plan document that does not have any effects itself, but in the future but it sets up how to mitigate for impacts in the future. There are changes proposed to the hearing draft in both the memorandum that was before you on October 19th and then the one for you today. 10-foot parkways on Taft, 20-foot third floor setback, recreation area criteria for mixed-use projects that would be consistent with other multifamily projects in the area then, and exceptions for single-family residential projects in the West Taft corridor. And there are, as I mentioned, corrections in the October 19th memo. So with all that, we're recommending you adopt the mitigated negative declaration and that you approve the amendments in Exhibits A and B with the changes per this discussion and any changes you desire. That concludes my report. Any questions?
Chairman, thank you, Mr. Lopes.
Chairman Rappaport, Chuck Stevenson. I failed to mention earlier that we've been in close coordination with Public Works on the circulation component, and the engineer that's been working with us on that is in the audience, Dale Ramey. So if you have questions relative to the circulation pattern or the status of Mary Street, for instance, then he's prepared to answer any questions for you.
Thank you, Mr. Stevenson. Do any of the commissioners have questions of staff?
I have one question for staff and one question of the chair. There are not many, but there are a few specific items throughout this document that I'd like to talk with staff and the commission about. Would you prefer to have public testimony first or after we have that discussion?
I think if you have questions of staff, that's appropriate now. If not, I think it's appropriate when we bring it back to the commission.
Okay, well, I didn't know if there would be a benefit for the public hearing that before their testimony, but
are they questions?
Well, my one flat-out question of staff is, Jim, you, Mr. Lopes, you referred to you used a phrase, discretionary standards that would be subject to conditional use permits. And I want to understand better the concept of a discretionary standard. Because generally, I think when we look at standards, we're like, okay, this is what we know we have to do. And when an applicant comes in, they're thinking, okay, these are the standards, these are what we have to comply with. But if everything is discretionary, then, you know, maybe you can clarify the value of that.
Well, I may have misspoke. We have two kinds of standards, basically, ministerial and discretionary. The meaning in this case is that discretionary standards are interpretable. They're written in a way that you have flexibility in how you meet the standard. They're not down to the foot or the inch of how you meet the standard. Mm-hmm. But because of that, they can't be reviewed just as you would a building permit. They have to be then decided on in a hearing situation where a hearing body has the discretion to decide whether the street furniture, all those things are addressed in both plans.
I would add, though, that the technical committee that we worked with on preparing the West TEF portion was very, not very concerned. They were concerned that they not set up the same sort of architecture that was occurring in the Old Town area. So there was some distinctions emphasized that the West TEF side was its own area, but wanted some linkages to the Old Town. So it was a delicate balance, but they related in that sense.
Okay. And are you getting projects into the Old Town area that are conforming? You're getting proposals. I don't know when that plan was adopted, but I was curious whether you've been getting much
yes
development.
Well, no. We've had several plans applied for and approved in the Old Town area, some very attractive mixed-use projects that have not yet started.
But have been approved.
Yes.
Thanks.
Madam Chair, maybe I
yes.
could go from there to maybe showing you a couple of projects, as I indicated I would, that are in process or approved in the West Teft area, just briefly.
That would be good.
Okay.
Thank you.
So I'll do that. This is a project. Well, this is a project in the West Teft area. This shows proposed Bloom Street coming into.
I think you probably need to use your mic at the
desk.
It was
working earlier. Here comes the tech. He's going to hit it with a stick. It'll work.
So it's always a simple solution that we never see. Thank you. Appreciate it. So you see Teft Street on the left and a series of buildings along the Teft Street frontage and then along proposed Bloom Street going to the south in this case. And I could turn this so that this is north and Teft Street's at the top. And then you can see this is a project that has a park in the middle, a recreation area, and this is a mixed-use project. This was flatly, and I think this was at the Planning Commission. Am I correct, Chuck?
Yes.
This is also addressing a street at the rear that is a proposed street that would be parallel to Teft, and it has live-work units facing that street in the back. A larger project is proposed, and the applicant is Shapiro, and this is on the corner of South Frontage and Hill Street. So Hill Street is at the bottom, coming into South Frontage at a new alignment, though, pardon me. And this project then has three fronting buildings at that corner, and periodically it really tries to create an internal Main Street environment inside the project. And the architecture for that particular project looks like this. It's a series of two- and three-story buildings. So these are two of the projects that I can show you today and how they are evolving. I don't have the Newman project with us today, but it is a similar kind of project with some street fronting buildings.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Wyatt, any further questions?
I guess the last question that I'm still not too clear on, I'm sorry since I wasn't here at the last meeting, the access issues were worked out. We did get letters from neighbors. And so am I clear that the questionable road, was it Tanis or?
Yes, that has not, that's been deleted from connecting to a neighborhood to the west. So that parallel street would end before it wouldn't even go to that neighborhood now.
And is that in your corrections or revisions to the staff report?
Well, the public hearing, it was corrected before the public hearing draft.
Okay.
It was deleted from the plan, basically, when we did the public hearing draft.
Great.
Thank you.
Mr. Roos?
Sure.
Rose?
Whoever
you are.
The area of the design plan, and you discussed this on page 1-3 of the staff report, because we heard at our last meeting that people were concerned that this went too far to the west and suggesting that some of these wider solutions were not appropriate in that area. Could you discuss the changes you're recommending there? And evidently they're not in this thing, but they are, if we should say,
Corey portion of the South County plan. Is that correct?
Yes, and that is an approach that we have in Santa Margarita and in Cambria. Cambria design plan are also standards with minor use permit requirements.
Okay. These are actually kind of clarifications. You mentioned, again, minor use permit. If a project were to meet without any discretionary standards involved, would meet all of the standards in the plan, are they still required to go through a minor use permit?
Yes, that would be the case. The in reviewing a project, we can do that through a building permit, or we need some other mechanism then to review design issues, whether it meets the design standards in this design plan. And that mechanism is the minor use permit review process. So we would need to go through a minor use permit to find out if it does meet the standards. And if it does, then it's a simple recommendation for approval.
Oh, I realize it's probably a simple recommendation, but it does involve more dollars and more time. Mm-hmm. And that's why I asked the question. If it is totally in compliance with the standards, why is it necessary to have a minor use permit?
I can, if you don't mind, Jim, I can like to take a response to that. The problem that we've run into before is when we try to be sensitive and concerned about the permit level, what we then have to face is crafting language for a particular desired result that is very precise to a measurable component so that a person at the front counter can mm-hmm. measure it or evaluate it, and there's no discretion. It's either black or white, you're in or you're out. That's okay. That's a choice you can make. But on the other hand, that takes away design flexibility that architects might want to have in trying to achieve the objective of the design plan, but it may not meet that exact measure. And so whenever you introduce that amount of flexibility, then there needs to be some discretion on the planning side to evaluate, did mm-hmm. it achieve the desired goal? And then we've in a way, painted ourselves into a discretionary permit. And that in the lowest one that we have is the minor use permit.
Yes, Mr.
I had a follow-up to that on page 2 of the design plan. You have the, I guess, the language that's going to eventually appear in the land use ordinance. And you talk about permit requirements. And I'm down under 2B, exterior facade remodeling and expansion that exceed 10% may be approved as minor use permits.
Yeah, Bob, you need to give us a page.
I did.
Page 2.
Go to your plan. The very first page we're going to call page 1, and then turn that over, and it'll be called page 2.
Oh, I think we must have a later plan than you.
We have a different.
Very, very front. I got
references from Design Workshop, background, that one.
No, Bob has a different book than us.
I've got a different book, and it's a memo, October 6th, to interested individuals and agencies from Chuck Stevens, and it's a public review draft, and it's...
I don't have that.
I think it might be part of our original staff report.
Yes, it's
on... Oh, okay, I was looking at the...
I think we all were, because somehow Bob got a bound copy. But anyway, we can find us.
Okay. She's got it. Okay, but you can share it. I'll share it. It's a statement right here, which essentially talks about a minor use permit, and I'm having trouble with that. Is that like going to be a little less money?
Yes, it is less money, and so it's a truncated process.
Truncated process?
Mm-hmm.
That meant absolutely nothing to me.
Me neither. I'm sorry. Could you perhaps define that for us?
Well, these are permits that are exempt from CEQA, so they don't have that review and that cost. And I think, is that the main difference? I think that's the primary difference.
Let's get down to the Commissioner Rappa's concern, the money. How much less money? Is it half the cost of the minor use permit? Or?
I don't know the exact amounts.
I'm not certain on the amount of less money for the minor use in that case, but...
Okay, and then I just have one last question. You mentioned that we haven't really identified mitigations for certain situations, and I guess I'm kind of confused why we didn't, if we've gone through all of this and...
Could you clarify mitigations for what, in what respect?
I believe it was stated that we...
relative to circulation, so that if certain traffic impacts are quantified, then they'll pay a mitigation fee. Typically, mitigations are money that are paid in to resolve the problem in some fashion. In this case, though, the community has identified concerns about building height, parkway setback, and so to address those concerns, those are, if you will, mitigated through the standards that are identified in the guidelines.
Okay. Maybe it'll get answered, clarified. Absolutely. Go ahead.
The review of the project includes CEQA, reviewing
Correct.
Environmental impacts, and that's where the word mitigation usually lands. We talk about mitigating for potentially significant impacts. And those are proposed in the mitigated negative declaration in the form of mitigation measures, and they end up being proposed conditions of approval then to be determined whether they're adequate or not. And the hearing decision person, in this case my use permit is a hearing officer, decides whether they're adequate. And of course, the public hearing is a chance for the public then to comment on those proposed mitigation measures for environmental impact.
Okay, I think you have clarified it, because I knew there was CEQA review, and we have identified certain impacts that can and will be mitigated, and yet somehow I misunderstood that we hadn't identified. But we have, it will be on a project-by-project basis, whether or not the mitigation mm-hmm. does reduce the level.
Exactly. Yeah,
just for instance, a visual impact in one case might be mitigated with planting trees at a higher density. A mitigation for a different project may be mitigated by requiring a lower building height or more articulation or something. There's a variety of ways to mitigate any given general impact.
Yeah. And at this level, when we're proposing standards that require street furniture or something a little more significant like buildings up near the street,
mm-hmm.
We don't know exactly how that's going to affect every property's view mm-hmm. from the sidewalk and so on. So, we wait for the project proposal to come in to see how that measures up.
Okay, thank you. Are there any other questions of staff on this? We will then go to the public portion. I do have one speaker slip on this item. Anyone else who wishes to comment is certainly welcome. Please fill out a white slip in the back. And Mr. Nguyen, you're up.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. My name is Mike Nguyen, and I'm from Napomo.
I've been involved in this process since it began years ago with your planning staff. And I do want to commend them, notably Messrs. Stevenson and Lopes for their work. We've had many community meetings. It's been for the advisory council innumerable times with new iterations each time, and it has enjoyed great public support. We've had moments in which we quibbled about whether three stories was exactly right or whether smart growth is that smart, but it has nonetheless passed each of the tests that we came to. I would like to speak in support of retaining the requirement for a MUP in the designs. In our experience, if you have pretty elevations and nice drawings and nice little pictures of trees and some sort of a description, and then you have the word should, you can still get strip malls and endless rows of shoeboxes. On the other hand, if the design is so highly articulated and defined that you're in an architect is in a straitjacket, we don't get their best work. They feel constrained. To send people to your staff who really understand the vision for this and then let them work, negotiate these things, I think is a very sensible thing to do. I would like to speak to one aspect of it that I started to say it's subtle. I just caught on recently myself. That's the only reason I think it's subtle. we support smart growth and smart growth principles will be used here. And generally, we end up using less water, design for that sort of thing. And so you'll find that it doesn't reach a level of significance in terms of requirement. However, smart growth only works if there's parks for children, unless it specifies that they're senior housing. And we never specify water for those parks when we design it. So you look at the design of a number of buildings, you say how much water they're going to use, and we never say, oh yes, and over here in the public park, we're going to need some water for these facilities. Without parks, pocket parks and other parks, these things are really intolerable for children. And that's one of the things that causes people to look at smart growth a bit askance. It seems like child abuse that large. So I would urge you to think about different ways over...
Invite Dale Ramey to come and just update you briefly on the Mary Street extension, which is a really vital component in the West TEF plan. And if you had any questions on other circulation parts of that, he's the most knowledgeable on that.
Mr. Ramey, would you like to address the commission?
My name is Dale Ramey. I'm with Public Works Transportation Division. At this point, we have entered into an agreement with Ted Moore for the construction of Mary Avenue. This is a reimbursement agreement. So we are going through the phases of getting an appraisal for the properties that are going to be needed to the right-of-way properties, and he is in design right now of the road. So in our agreement, we talk about having the road complete and open in March of 08. So at that point, Mary Avenue will be open to Hill Street from TEF Street.
Thank you. Are there any questions? And it's my understanding that on a voluntary basis, because this plan has not been adopted, that there are other properties, projects that are contributing to many of these circulation improvements?
That's correct. We are working with Dave Watson with King Ventures and with Mr. Shapiro for the realignment of the South Frontage Road.
And those negotiations are still going well?
Yes. We're still negotiating the contracts.
Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. It's back to the commission. Is there questions? Move to action?
Yeah. This is the time when I have a couple things I'd like to discuss with staff and perhaps the commission. Mr. Lopes, on page 510, under parking lots policy 5-6, it says parking lots should be easily accessible, serve multiple parcels, have attractive landscaping, and located so that they enhance desired pedestrian orientation. I made a notation here that after attractive landscaping, we might consider inserting the phrase including shade trees, because parking lots have their own sort of heat radiating effects on the area. an attractive landscaping could be shrubs and hedges, and I just think it's important that we have shade trees in our parking lots. So
that sounds very appropriate. We have other ordinance standards that require, you know, at least 50-60% shading
mm-hmm.
in a certain time frame. So those are in effect anyway. But
okay.
it's always good to, you know, bolster and support.
And support other elements of the general plan. Great.
And could you head me to that particular standard again?
So then it would read, parking lots should be easily accessible, serve multiple parcels, have attractive landscaping, including shade trees.
Okay.
And be located, et cetera.
And while we're discussing
mm-hmm.
parking lots, they tend to be asphalt and big, and now you don't get any water absorption, and we're trying to absorb the water back into the groundwater
mm-hmm.
basin. And mm-hmm. would it be appropriate to maybe talk about that in here?
Yeah.
Because not, in my opinion, not every parking lot has to be, you know, miles of asphalt slash concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, we've heard from Public
yeah.
Works that they have turned over a whole new leaf. And
Richard Marshall, Department of Public Works.
Don't think he appreciated my
comment. No, we are moving in the right direction, I believe, finally. We're going to be developing a policy document called the Low Impact Development Design Manual, which will apply countywide. So that's one piece of information. It's in progress. In terms of how things happen between now and then, as a matter of routine and, in fact, by ordinance requirement, drainage on parking lots and all impervious surfaces within this community are already required to be the subject of a drainage plan, and our standard requirement is that that drainage be routed to a retention basin for groundwater recharge. So while it doesn't occur right there in the parking lot, it does occur on the same property where it falls. We're always open to alternative materials for parking, balancing consideration, you know, with pavers or other kinds of materials is that they still provide the right kind of walking surface for people after they get out of their cars. So I think all of that's possible. Additional language in here is okay, but I want to let you know that I think a lot of it's already addressed in other ways.
Thank you.
Well, Mr. Rose, if you wanted to suggest some language, I think having
something if we're
going to
have a countywide thing.
Well, except we don't have it yet. I mean, they're working on it. This one's further along in the process. And it sounds like it wouldn't conflict with
it is. It has to do with low-impact design or something, however we wish to state it. Maybe could staff work on some language while we're talking?
I'm
or?
Comfortable with what Chuck just read into the record.
I like it.
Mm-hmm, me too.
Okay, I didn't hear it also. I agree.
Thank you for that, Mr. Stevens.
Other questions?
Yeah, Bob's comment actually on the parking led right into my next comment, which is on directed on page 8.4 under policy 8.5, which is street trees. And it's currently written, it says, large street trees should be planted at regular intervals along the parkways of West Heft and sidewalks of Mary and Bloom Avenues and other local streets and lanes within center medians. And then there are a series of standards that follow. And I would like to propose that perhaps we add either an additional standard or some language under the general policy that refers to tree-friendly pavers, which are semi-permeable materials. It breaks my heart so often to see, you know, trees that are planted in these little, you know, circles in the concrete or the cement, and within several years the tree's grown up and there's basically no buffer. I mean, I understand that sidewalks have to be walkable, but if those open areas were surrounded with a buffer of permeable pavers, it keeps the root zone of the tree a lot healthier and extends its life expectancy and reduces the amount of problems that it causes in an urban setting. So Is there some language or any
I think suggestions? We could, and perhaps Mr. Marshall wants to add in, but typically there would be a tree well of a certain mm-hmm. dimension, and mm-hmm. there would be a tree grate. And tree grates now, many of them, the design has a removable center portion that as mm-hmm. the tree trunk grows, that can be removed without having
perfect.
To the whole thing.
Can we specify that those need to be used or similar, you know, similar technologies need to be used with the planting of street trees in this plan?
I think we can come up with some language here.
It's already a function of the new and improved county standards.
Are they in effect yet?
As of last August.
Oh, terrific. Mr. Lopes, do you see a need to cross-reference that here? Or
we have a tree grate. In the streetscape chapter, we have a tree grate shown as okay. the type of facility to use for a tree well. Maybe as importantly, though, and I think tree wells and so on in the right-of-way or out there in the sidewalk mm-hmm. are addressed both by that and mm-hmm. as well as public works standards. But inside projects where you have parking lots and
right.
trees next to parking spaces and so on, that may be a place that we'd want to
okay.
encourage semi-permeable pavers.
I tell you the reason I like the idea for adding language here is because this is what you, staff and the public has done a great job in creating a real sort of user-friendly, comprehensive document that's easy for people to pick up and take advantage of. And so when my hunch is, I mean, I didn't even know that other document really existed, and if I don't know it, I'm sure a lot of other people don't know it. So, it might just be good for early planning purposes to have some kind of consistent reference to the consistency or some consistent reference just
maybe
to keep our street trees healthy.
Maybe I could suggest in the standards on 8-4 then there be a new standard inserted after B. It would be a new C, and it would be pavement near trees within project sites, period. And it would say within the interior of projects, pavement that is located near parking lot or other tree installations should have semi-permeable paving to...
Or just tree installations shall include.
Okay, tree installations shall include
yeah.
semi-permeable paving within the projected drip lines.
Yeah.
And that would be on 8-4?
A new C, yeah.
A new C.
I thought it would be 8-5, which is street trees.
I did too.
8-4 was mid-block walkways.
You must have a different version. I'm sorry we have conflicting versions here.
Well, he's looking at mine too, so it's 8-4, and you're talking about under trees.
Policy 8-5, that's where we need to go.
Okay. Yeah.
Policy 8-5, that is not 8-4.
Right, there you go. 8-5 on 8-4.
All right, okay, we have a new D and then renumbering or re-lettering, pardon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm still a little confused about that, though. Aren't we in a section for street trees, and now we're talking about trees within project installations? Is this not the...
2, under the standards for scenic resources, items 3 and 4. Item 3 says, views of significant scenic resources, including Tamati Ridge, shall not... be more than 50% obscured by buildings and street trees. When you say shall not be more than 50% obscured, do you mean 50% up the height of that mountain range so that it's not obscuring the ridgeline, or do you mean 50% of the site shall not, you know what I mean, shall remain open to the view as a view corridor? What does that mean?
Well, when we go look at a site and we see the view from the sidewalk as this guides us,
mm-hmm.
We have that snapshot of that view at that time. And what we're saying is that the project shouldn't obscure more than 50% of that total view. So that
it could be obscured horizontally or vertically. Take your pick.
Exactly.
Okay. So... then when we go on to number 4, which says, where views are already at least 50% blocked by development and or trees, new development within the obscured area is not considered an impact to the resource. So my question is, would that allow somebody who already who had a project that already partially obstructed Tamati Ridge to come in and completely obstruct the views of Tamati Ridge? Because the views are already 50% blocked, and so now I'm going to either build out to my lot line or add an additional story and completely block the view of the ridge. Whereas if I'd been a new project coming forward, I would have had to have preserved 50% of that view corridor.
I think what Four is trying to say is that where there's blockage of that view already, a project can come in and occupy that space that's obscuring the view, and it's not going to increase the impact by doing that.
Then I'm glad to hear that that's the intent. So maybe we should add some language to clarify that along the lines of new development within the obscured areas is not considered an impact to the resource so long as no additional percentage of view is obstructed or something.
Good. Thank you.
Does that work? Okay.
Yeah.
That concludes my comments and suggestions. Is the commission okay with that additional clarification?
We'll find out. Mr. Marshall?
I do have one very minor recommendation from the Public Works Department on page 8-6. Policy 8-8.7, those figures are just staying one digit out of phase, I guess. Item B, traffic signal service boxes. As much as I share the desire that we could make these things more attractive and less obtrusive, the technology isn't really there. To put them underground may be a problem with electric operations and rainwater. And to put them in buildings, I think, doesn't provide the necessary access for operations staff. So I have no problem with them being painted, and that's a little bit of help I can offer. So I would strike some of the language if you're all in concurrence.
You're at 8-6, is that?
Yes, page 8-6, policy 8-7B.
Okay.
Madam Chairman? If I might, a question for Richard Marshall. Does the language, if no feasible other location is available, give you any comfort? Unless looking ahead to the life of this plan, there might be technology in a few years that might enable undergrounding of those facilities. Is that enough wiggle room?
Well, I guess in reality, we're talking about, low-impact design, which encourages water to remain and all of these types of things. And I happen to know from personal experience that the below ground utility services and this approach just doesn't, they don't mix with each other. I personally love the below ground, but we can't have it both ways.
Well,
you get the idea, well, it has to be required in the building, so that takes square footage away from whatever the project is.
The basic thing is that to operate a traffic signal, a technician needs to be able to go there, open the door of the cabinet, and be standing, able to see all of the controls inside and all of the signal immediately behind it. And, I mean, I've had that assignment myself, and there just really aren't any other locations other than out there in front of God and everybody.
Is that something that is going to be in the foreseeable future, or is technology changing that you're aware of?
I'm not aware of any change, and plus I think the operational requirements aren't going to change. You need to be able to stand in a certain place and see certain things. So I hate to rain on the parade. Everything else here is a love fest, but I don't think this one is practical, and I make this recommendation for your consideration.
I tend to agree with them because I see them out there playing with that one on Vineyard and Maine / Templeton Road. And
I think what we're looking for with the installation of street lights and traffic signals is that they'll be painted a color. They'll be powder-coated a permanent color. And we would like to then suggest that these kinds of boxes be painted that color too. So one way to maybe change this would be just to say traffic signal service boxes should be painted the same color as the signal poles.
And that, in fact, was what I was recommending. That part's fine. So,
so we have a change to 87B.
Keep the first four words and then strike out until you get to shall be painted.
So we'd go with shall be painted?
Yeah.
Let me see if Dale can live with that. He's nodding affirmatively.
May I just ask something, since you all are intimately familiar with this document? I guess, was there in all of the discussions consideration to bunch all these things together? You have, you know, the fire department that comes in with a huge big backflow device that they set smack in front of the building. You have signalization that requires different things. You have all of these things. And I guess I would find it less obtrusive if somehow these could all somehow be coordinated and not. I know that might sound kind of, and I'm not sure that it's our. The community's worked very hard on this, so I think sometimes we get a little picky, myself included. It just is sort of a pet peeve with me to see a beautiful building, everything everybody's gone to so much work on, and then this great big huge backflow device sits in front of it.
Well, we had a strong concern about that and all other utilities that are associated with the project. Item D, or Standard D, does address the backflow prevention devices and other things like the double check deflector valves and so on. But the notion I think you have is a good one, is to coordinate the location of all these facilities so that they're unobtrusive and maybe located in one utility corner.
And is that included in the document?
No, it could be an item E. It could be a standard E to coordinate.
I'd personally like to make it a standard A, and so they saw it right off the bat.
Actually, the preamble to public utilities section might be a place where you could add a few words, Jim. It talks about they should contribute to the physical and visual features of the streetscape and should not intrude on public views along. So we could add some language in there that you just mentioned about.
Do we consider the backflow device is actually not a public facility? It's a private facility that's a requirement generally of the fire department. And so would that be included? Again, not to rewrite this document, but if there's a place that's sort of a generalized place that talks about these.
Well, this would be it. This would be the place to say that, utility devices should be coordinated to have central locations that are as far removed from the right-of-way as feasible and be screened with landscaping or walls.
Well, then you get into other troubles because people have to come in and service them and monitor them.
Well, that's part of the design. The design speaks to both screening and access. That's a given. For instance, with the fire department's check valves, those are often now screened. They're usually located farther back from sidewalks than they were a few years ago. And, in fact, there is quite a setback you can go. You can go back up to 25 feet from right-of-way to locate those valves.
Okay, then without belaboring it, we're going to add some wording under policy 8-7 in that sort of first generalized statement. Is that correct?
I have some suggested language if it would help staff. And it could be in the preamble. It could just be a new sentence. Let's see how this goes. Whenever feasible, utility support facilities shall be consolidated and as can't even read my own writing, unobtrusive as possible.
That sounds good.
It works for me.
Me too. Okay, any other comments, questions, a move to action?
Motion's not here.
Right.
Okay, so we approve the West Teft Corridor design plan as amended by our previous discussion and certify the negative declaration.
Madam Chair, if I might, if you look at page 134, I think that's the beginning of the mitigated negative declaration. So if the motion also said that the Planning Commission recommends that the board adopt mitigated negative declaration ED06072 and the attached findings that are necessary in order to adopt that mitigated negative deck. So remember, all you're doing today is making a recommendation to the board, so it doesn't have to be perfect.
Right. So moved.
And I'll second it.
Okay, and the changes that I identified were 5-1, 5-6, 7-5, 8-7, and 8.7B. Is that correct?
As well as the changes outlined in today's
staff report.
First four pages of the staff report.
October 19th, right?
No, as today's first four pages of the staff report is dated January 25th, and starting on page 2, he's got some specific wording. For example, about narrowing down the western edge of the design plan to just the street. I'm assuming that that was all part of Ms. Christie's motion.
Correct. Absolutely. And your second?
Yeah, absolutely.
Any further discussion? Has the secretary got it all, since we made it a little confusing?
Hello. Challenger.
On a roll call.
Roll call, please.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Okay.
Thank you.
Would the secretary please introduce the next item?
Item 2 is a hearing to consider an appeal by Larry Bross of the Planning Director Determination, County File Number DTM 20060003. Marsha Lee is a project manager.
Good morning. Marsha Lee, staff planner. The purpose of the general plan conformity report is to determine if the proposed sale is in conformance with the county general plan. This conformity report is for the proposed sale of approximately 584 acres by the County of San Luis Obispo to the State of California. On December 4th, the conformity determination was made and submitted to the Planning Commission. An appeal to the determination was filed, to this determination was filed on December 18, 2006. The parcels are located south and west of the community of Oceano and south of Arroyo Grande Creek and the Dune Preserve. The site is within the recreation land use category and within the rural South County coastal planning area. The project area contains 29 parcels located in the Oceano Dune State Vehicular Recreation Area and the Dune Preserve. This slide also shows the La Grande Tract, which was subdivided in 1905. The county acquired these parcels from bank foreclosures in 1944 and subsequently. The California Department of Parks and Recreation, Off-Road, Off-Highway Motor Vehicle Recreation Division, currently holds a lease with the County of San Luis Obispo to operate the county-owned property as part of the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area. The lease agreement is for the care, maintenance, and control for the purposes of the state vehicular area, recreation area, and trail system of lands under the county jurisdiction. The 25-year lease expires June 20th, 2008. This slide shows the county-owned property and the state-owned property. The state park boundary is shown in yellow. The state-owned lands are in red, and the county-owned parcels are shown in green. This area is mostly within the riding area. And the black line that you see that the cursor is on is the location, approximate location of the fencing to separate the vehicular right area. There's no change of use proposed. The current area management meets the Coastal Act goal of providing recreational opportunities consistent with protection of coastal resources. And the area would be required to meet the conditions of the coastal development permit and amendments. There were a couple of issue areas raised on this appeal. The first issue was that the residents of Oceano have not been consulted on the sale. And the staff response, the purpose of the conformity report is to determine if a potential sale is in conformance with the general plan. The decision to sell a property will be made by the County Board of Supervisors at a formal public hearing. And secondly, there was an issue on all potential impacts to the Oceano area need to be understood prior to the sale. Staff response is that there is no change in use proposed with the sale, therefore no change in the area is expected to result from this change in ownership. Staff recommends confirmation of the receipt and filing of the General Plan Conformity Report, DTM 2006-00003, finding the proposed sale of 584.04 acres by the County of San Luis Obispo to the State of California in conformance with the County General Plan. I'd like to point out that there was a letter dated January 25th submitted, which I believe is passed out to the Commission, from a coast keeper, San Luis Obispo coast keeper. That concludes staff comments.
Are there any questions of staff?
Sure.
Mr. Rose?
What would happen if this sale did not occur? Let's, for whatever reason, the board took action and, no, we're not selling it. What would happen? Would the permit, the existing coastal development permit, go away, or would county put up fences or something? Or?
Matt Jansen, planning staff. I think with regards to the existing coastal development permit, that's a Coastal Commission-issued permit. So we wouldn't be able to speak to the details of what would happen to that permit. We could offer that as long as the owner, whoever it was in compliance with the conditions on that permit, that things could continue as they are. But that's an if. Regarding what would happen to the property and whether the county would continue to own it or not and how we would treat that, I would defer to General Services to answer that part of the question.
Maybe they could.
I think so.
Good morning. I'm Karen Madalena with the Department of General Services. I'm the county's real property manager. And honestly, we would need to defer to the board. There's a couple things that could happen. They could choose to renew the lease, or they could choose to try and find an additional buyer. I mean, it would just be up to the board to decide how they would want to handle the property.
Well,
in that case,
to your knowledge, has the state said you need to sell that to us, or are they pushing for something?
The state has come to us with a proposal, and so that's what we have. That's what started this whole process. Is the state is interested in purchasing this property?
Well, is this? How can I say this? Is this an offer we can't refuse?
Well, we have not actually received the offer yet. We are anticipating receiving that within the next 30 days. But again, I think it's premature for me to say because we haven't received the offer yet.
Okay.
So does that mean you don't know how much money is being proposed or offered?
We do not. We have not received the offer
yet. You haven't kicked around ballpark figures or?
Like a dollar or?
There has been an appraisal done, and at this time, I wouldn't be comfortable saying just because until we receive the offer, we...
You know, I think this might be interesting for us to know, but we have a conformity report consistency mm-hmm. before us. And so whereas we inquiring minds want to know, I'm not sure that it's part of our deliberations here today.
Yeah, we haven't started those negotiations yet.
Has did General Services consider the question of lot merger or consolidation as a condition of the sale?
Lot merger. There's the tract is made up of a 20, lot of lots.
Right, 29 parcels. I think I saw somewhere in here.
Or in conformance, but certainly it doesn't make it less in conformance if that were to occur. I think it's an interesting idea.
Mm-hmm. I guess I think the question or that could be made is that if we have the ability to merge or consolidate as a general plan policy statement and that was part of this transfer, then that would even further fortify the consistency with the general plan, I believe is the question.
That's why I'm asking.
So the short answer is yes.
Okay. Love those short answers.
Other questions of Public Works?
Not of General Services.
General Services, I'm sorry.
Okay. We did receive a letter, as noted, dated today, from the San Luis Obispo Coast Keeper, Gordon Hensley, who cites five specific policies that in the letter writer's opinion, Mr. Gordon Hensley, are not consistent with this determination. And I'm wondering, but we don't have the benefit of knowing what those policies are. He simply refers to open space element number 30. He refers to page 16 of the Oceano specific plan. But I don't know what any of those things are, so not having all my planning documents with me today. Did staff have any responses to Mr. Hensley's specific concerns?
Looking at the various items on the list here, these were taken into consideration when the conformity report was prepared. Most of these deal with the challenge of balancing a recreational vehicle riding with the preservation of resources in the area. And the coastal development permit and all the amendments and study groups, et cetera, annual reports, all move toward addressing that that balancing task. I don't have specific. If Mr. Hensley could point out some specific information on here, other than that, that's my answer.
Well, we do have a number of speaker slips, and
no,
so we.
In the audience.
And I would hope that maybe a staff member. Mr. Hogue, who's good at this, could be flipping them out for us to look at after public testimony, so we could, in fact, look at Open Space Policy 30A1, because I can't dismiss it
right.
unless I've looked at it.
I have it in front of me if you'd like me to read it.
I'd like it on the screen, if even better.
Well, maybe to sort of expedite our... Oh, okay, go ahead.
I'm kind of a visual person. You know. And I know these are in various documents.
Oh, that's helpful.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad we got that out.
Could you be an audio person for right now? And
almost.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
Went a little.
30A1.
Prohibition conflicts with the Donna Lands of Caesar County, conflicts with the use of adjacent county owned properties as a result of damage.
So I guess the crux of the matter is getting down to A1 there, where it says the we should coordinate with other local, state, and federal agencies to encourage a prohibition of off-highway vehicles on public lands where it conflicts with the adopted plans of those agencies or county plans and ordinance, where it conflicts with uses of adjacent property and owned property in relation to damage to sensitive resources or is causing trespassing. But I see we've already got the notice, the word balance up there.
But is there anything in our action today that is going to not coordinate these activities? Are these to support this policy? I haven't seen anything.
This is coordinate for the purposes of encouraging the prohibition of off-highway vehicles on public lands.
So right. And just in transferring the property, is there some... we're transferring the property as it is used today. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So is there anything that we're implying with that transfer that would change the...
of conflicting general plan goals, general plan policies, and in some cases maybe portions of general plan documents about, you know, the appropriate use of a sensitive resource area like this. And I think we are going to have some sort of in-depth discussion about how we reach a conclusion about which parts of the general plan we want to be in compliance with and which general parts of the general plan we're okay with not being in compliance with, because I think it really is a judgment call that could go either way.
Well, but before we have that discussion, I would like to ask, are there any further questions of staff on any of the materials that have been presented to us? Seeing none from the commission, I'm going to open it to the public. This is an appeal by Larry Boss, and he and I have spoken, and he will have 10 minutes to present his...
Are you keeping an eye on the time, Penny?
We will. I don't see him, though. Where did he go to?
I think he just stepped out.
Well, he's using up his time.
Well, we're waiting for Mr. Bross. Maybe I'm going to sort of...
Well, here he comes. Let's, Sarah, because you go on for 10 minutes.
No. Too. I'm going to assume that this is going to go after lunch, and perhaps during the lunch break, staff could come up with the examples of the other 5 points in Mr. Hensley's letter in addition to open space policy number 30A1.
Well, then that does... we will... Mr. Bross? As the appellant, you and I had discussed about a 10-minute time period, and you indicated you could stay within that, so I'm going to watch my watch, and if you'd give your name for the record, we'd appreciate it.
I'm Larry Bross. I really want to thank you for hearing this appeal. A resident of Oceano for the last 20 years, actually a newcomer. I've owned the property for 40 years on Strandway in Oceano. First of all, I'd like to point out there's no way that you can discuss 38% of all of the park's recreation area without discussing the entranceway that gets the vehicles through, which happened to be the community that I live in. And so I'd like to sit down and discuss that, because the whole intent of a general plan is to protect the health and welfare of its citizenry. Now, the county decided to wash its hands with the whole affair 25 years ago, where it leased land to the state. It leased the land, no money, so long as it won't be sued. I don't blame them. They did that 25 years ago. And, you know, as a county, as a landlord, one would think it still has certain obligations, especially to the community that it goes through. I have all kinds of maps that I'd like to show you. But let me continue with my remarks. 25 years was a whole different picture when I first came in there. There were a few homes out in the development. I had a little 16 by 24 cabin at that time on a lot and a half on the front in Oceana. And things grew. This is the most, it's the only place, the OHV, it's the only place where you can drive in the state of California on the beach. And you know, I've always prefaced it by saying I drove on that beach. Of course, I never drove on the beach since the state came in. I've never paid a penny entrance fee onto that beach. But both my kids learned how to drive automobiles out on that beach. We used it at that time as a vacation home. And of course, I retired here from teaching in 1987. And my purpose isn't to ban vehicles on that beach. I don't think there's any way we'll ever do that. But my purpose here is to say that if the sale takes place, the only control that the county has to protect its citizenry is gone. I want county input on this. On this park that goes through our community. Now, I don't know if you read the papers about what happens out there in Oceano. I'm sure you do. You live in this community. You know what goes on. And I don't want to, you know, I'm not saying it's all bad. It's great in some ways. It's beautiful during the middle of the week. On weekends, it's impossible. On holiday, I happened to come downtown and had a doctor's appointment, and I figured, I'll go down and see who appealed it, because, you know, it's a big issue. We're talking about 40% of the entire park that the county is part and party of, has been for the last 25 years.
Mr. Bross, you need to get to your conformity issues.
Yes. I'm talking about notice here first.
Okay.
That's the issue first, notice. So I came down there, and I noticed that nobody had appealed it, so I was forced to appeal it. And I went down the next day to speak to the advisory council, to our supervisor, and the advisory council, who had a meeting that day, had not heard anything about it. And this is a big issue. And so I don't believe you've given adequate notice. I mean, I get notice when somebody wants to put a curb cut in next door to me, but I didn't get notice of the 584 acres that was to be transferred. That's number one. Let me get to the conformity issue.
Good.
And then I'd like to also show some slides. we found this on the web of your general plan. And it's also on page A9 of the conformity report that the county, I'll notice, the same language is used in your general plan on the web as here, except there are certain things that are deleted or haven't been put in. It says policies for recreation and visitor-serving facilities. This is on A9. If you could read that, I'd appreciate it. And let me read what I have from your web, the county web. Recreation, and it says most of the lands designated in the recreation land use category are located in the dunes and wetlands adjacent to the coast. The ocean beaches and dunes are the principal tourist attractions of the South County. The coastal dunes are proposed by the State Department of Parks and Recreation for an expansion of the Pismo. It's kind of interesting, Pismo. It's the Oceano Park. You ought to get your general plan up to date. It's no longer called the Pismo State Vehicle Recreation Area. Those two contiguous state parks units encompass over 2,000 acres of beaches, wetlands, and sand dunes. Combined, the state beach and vehicle recreation areas are the major visitor attraction within the coastal zone, with over 3 million visitors per year, according to the State Department of Parks and Recreation, providing a wide variety of recreational opportunities, which it does, by the way.
The parks are famous for clamming, well, strike that one out, and driving on the beach and recreational vehicles used within the dunes. Existing facilities include a golf course. Well, you know that the county, I guess they're talking about the golf course here in Pismo, but the county rents from the state. Rather, the state rents from the county and the county golf course. Here it's a reverse situation. The state is renting from the county, and with the golf course, the county rents from the state. So the county is a landlord in this case and a tenant in the golf course. So I want to point out that the sale doesn't have to take place. You know, we could remain a landlord, and maybe with conditions, maybe with some control over this. But anyway, let me get back to this. Existing dune facilities include a golf course and two developed campgrounds. A major staging area must be developed to serve as a primary access to the dunes for off-road vehicle users. This is in your general plan. And I've been waiting 25 years for this staging area to occur. Every time it's been considered a temporary staging area. As far as I'm concerned, I'll show you where the staging area is. It's on Pier Avenue, right in the middle of our community, where the cars back up to Highway 1. That's the staging area. Now, the county has a duty. Now, let me look at the... Well, it's not very clear.
He's going to work on that. He's going to work on that. That's where we got a technician here.
There we go.
I'm sure you don't know what you're looking at.
I'd speak into the microphone, could you, Mr. Cross?
I'll try.
Good. Okay.
I'm sure you don't know what you're looking at. You're looking at a picture probably taken in the 60s of the old ramp, which went 45 due west out of off Pier Avenue.
Mr. Bross, just to interrupt, is this part of the parcel that's in question today? Is this the county owned?
It's the only way you get through.
And that's on the county owned parcel that's the subject of today's discussion?
This is on county owned land.
Thank you.
This is the only way you can get to those parcels.
But is this part of the property that is part of the transfer?
It is not part of it, but it is not part of the property, but it is what has been historically the way into that property.
I think we understand that, but we do need to ask you in your appeal to stick to the issues that are part of the property transfer.
This is the issue.
Okay, but this is not part of the transfer.
Because, if I may, Madam Chair, this is the issue, because in order to get to these parties, you have to come through this area.
And this property will...
And this causes this transfer not to be part of the general plan. It violates the general plan by making things unsafe, by actually, you know... I can describe to you what goes on a weekend, but this, by the way, does not exist today. Let me get to it, if I...
Well, I do... I would ask you to respect the conversation you and I had, which said you would try and keep your comments to around 10 minutes, well, and we're already at about 15, and so we do, I think, understand your issues, but we do need to ask...
Madam Chair, I'm fine with the appellant going through whatever presentation he has and making whatever points he has. I just wanted, for my clarification, to know what we were looking at. So,
thank you. Okay, what we're looking at is the old ramp which went due west. Oh, well, okay. That's okay. Let's show it. This is by the way, I want to show that the county was involved in the old ramp in the 60s. As a sand removal of some to the county, that the county was removing sand at that point. The county, not the state, but the county was.
I noticed Mr. Guyton's bill is $20 for, he didn't get rich that way. Okay. This is important, I think. If you'll notice, this is the entrance into through the Oceano subdivision down Pier Avenue from Highway 1. On the right, on my right, is Highway 1, and there's Pier Avenue coming down through the subdivision, through Pier. Now, that subdivision is mostly, the Pier Avenue, rather, is mostly commercial. And the cars line up not only to the where the homes are, but all the way back to Highway 1 on weekends. On holidays, it's further than that. No, I'm not through with that yet. I'd like to point out to you that to the south, where when I originally came into that community, only 5 lots were built. It's completely built today, all the way going. It continues south, and I have other maps to show you all the subdivisions, which I'll spare you of at this point. But let's move on to the next one. All right, forget that. That's the same one. Move that out. All right, I don't know how to see this. Oh, this is from the specific plan showing a model view of what the community is supposed to look like. Now, it doesn't show how you're going to get onto the ramp because, you see, when the ramp originally was there going 45 degrees out, they changed the ramp. A key date, by the way, by state parks, in your packet you have a history of state parks, but they didn't put the key date that affects the community and these parcels out there. The key date is 1982 when there was an amazing storm that knocked out Pismo Pier, if you recall. It knocked out the ramp that I showed you. It knocked the ramp out, and the ramp was then moved to the southwest. In other words, today we don't have a ramp. Today we have constant sand removal in order to create a situation. I'd like to suggest that a general plan should encourage building, should encourage commercialism, and that all of that Smith Street has not been built. That the most of, on Pier Avenue, most of the community, there are just really four. There are maybe 5 or 6 viable businesses on that entire Pier Avenue from the point of view of there's a general store. There are 4 businesses that will support that will rent dune buggies out, which is the major industry there. And after that, Pier Avenue, an entrance, the most beautiful beach. One of the most beautiful beaches you can find is destitute because of what is being created because of this staging area that goes on there. Now, I'd like to suggest that the state has never built a staging area. The state started out with 300 vehicles out there, and all of this was done while the county was a landlord, while the county looked the other way. And I'd like to suggest that if this sale takes place, you know, this will continue. There is a way to achieve our specific plan. There's a way to achieve our specific plan, but it is not through this sale. If the status quo continues, you'll have the same. Now, let me go to this one.
No, Mr. Bross, I'm really sorry, but you are going to need to conclude your comments.
Right, let me conclude my comments with this book.
Well, not with the entire book. Please,
no,
just do it.
Not. Just the book. Of course. Madam, please. Of course not. This is the state likes to refer to this as the alternative access study. Now, there used to be 6 entrances onto this beach. Okay? There are now 2, and ours is the only entrance where there are homes that are built right up to it. In other words, Grand Avenue entrance, which, by the way, will be shut down because they're going to have to build that bridge on Grand Avenue because of the flood. And so it'll all come through this next few years on Pier Avenue. And I like to say this is not an alternative. It's an additional entrance. It's an all-weather entrance. The state spent close to $200,000 for that book to study four entrances. I'd like, as a condition of this sale, if a sale takes place, that the state determine which entrance to relieve Oceano that of this congestion, to allow the general plan to really take place. I thank you.
Thank you very much. We have opened the public hearing. It is 12:15. Our commission normally takes a lunch break at 12 o'clock. I do have a number of speaker slips. What is the pleasure of the commission? Do we want to work through lunch, or do we want to?
Madam Chair, with apologies, I have become so accustomed to the efficient running of this meeting, always breaking for lunch at noon, that I have made lunch plans to discuss actually some other pending county business at noon. So if we could come back at 1:30 and conclude this hearing, that would certainly be my preference.
Other commissioners? All right, we will then break for lunch and we will continue our public hearing, and we will move on to the public speaker slips that have been turned in.
And I would hope that staff could at least give us, you know, most of these documents that are referred to. We got the first one, and I appreciate that, but maybe the others are. All right, and I thank you for
thank
that.
Thank you. We will return from lunch at 1:30.
County areas. Currently, I reside in Shell Beach. As a native Californian, it is my responsibility to express my dissatisfaction with the state and the county for their complete disregard of the use of the Oceano Dunes area, the Pacific shoreline, and the sensitive surrounding environment. As I see it, the current lease agreement and many general plan and local coastal plan policies and standards are not in compliance with their stated goals and objectives regarding use. But given the time limit on speaking, I'll address but a few of the items. To begin, one of the lease agreement provisions identified in your staff report reads, "Property is accessible and use for enjoyment of all citizens under the control of the state. I am not an off-roader, but I am a dune lover. However, I have never been able to fully enjoy the Oceano Dunes, the natural preserve, or even the shoreline because I don't feel safe venturing by foot into these areas with all of the off-roaders. Plus, it's getting dirtier, noisier, and more run down every time I go out there. The San Luis Obispo County Land Use Element General Goals provide that goals for the environment include maintaining and protecting a living environment that is safe, healthful, and pleasant for all residents by assuring the protection of coastal resources. Planning Area Standard Number 6, Noise Control, also states, noise control measures shall be required for ORV use in proximity to the natural preserve areas. Yet the staging area is located right near the natural preserve area, as indicated on this map, page 2-21 of your staff report. It is a sound factory of vehicles in this area. If the county has not upheld its policies to provide safe, passive recreational uses, surely the state, in its ambitious quest to generate park maintenance funds through general tax revenues, does not respect these uses either. Therefore, I am distrustful of this proposed change of ownership. It seems that without the county's oversight, as park property owners, local citizens will be forced to go to the state with their concerns, and this feels like a complete sellout. I am very concerned that the sale of the property will only intensify what has been overlooked for years. Yes, perhaps the use is not changing, but the use is, always has been, and always will be, fundamentally inconsistent with the environment and completely unacceptable to many Californians. The sight of vehicles on the beach is grotesque. It is abnormal, and as a native Californian, I am embarrassed that the state of California allows this, and it is very unfortunate that the county of San Luis Obispo has been a party to it also. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Bob Bach? Nafisi, and he will be followed by Dr. Nell Langford. I would like to remind people, if possible, to stay to 3 minutes. I know it's hard, but...
Yes, excuse me, before I get started... I wanted to know if I could use the overhead and use the remote microphone.
Certainly. Are you prepared to leave us copies of what you show?
Yes.
Great.
I guess I don't really have to.
Okay, and you're going to see a yellow light when you're kind of running out of time, so if you could help us out, we'd sure appreciate it.
Very well. I'll do my best.
Okay, thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Bob Aknefisi. I live in Shell Beach, in the city of Pismo Beach, and I'm a land use environmental law attorney. I'm here representing myself today. I want to make 3 points today. I want to show you that there needs to be a new... That the county needs to engage in environmental analysis of this transfer, that the sale would not be consistent with the general plan goals and policies, and that the general plan and various elements are internally inconsistent when they describe the uses of the county property. As far as I'm concerned, San Luis Obispo County is the proper lead agency, and for reasons that I will discuss, an exemption is not appropriate in this case, A, because this project is not consistent with all applicable county goals and policies. The county goals and policies are internally inconsistent, and the project has the potential for causing environmental harm. Now, the reason I say it has a potential for causing additional increasing environmental harm is that, as the staff report discusses, right now, the county has a lot of, well, in theory, has a lot of control over what happens on this property. But once that is gone, the CDP, the Coastal Development Permit, is the only standard. And there's nothing to prevent state parks to intensify the use of that area. The sale is not consistent with goals and policies. I want to read to you from page 9 of the conformity report, which refers to Coastal Act policies. It says, the Coastal Act gives priority to preservation of environmentally sensitive habitat areas over the provision of recreational opportunities. However, many highly used recreational areas within the coastal zone are in or adjacent to sensitive habitat areas. Now, there is a conundrum. There's a contradiction that you can help the county get out of by allowing this land to be used for less intensive recreational use that would serve the general public by protecting the resources and providing passive recreation and not really be used in favor of a recreational use that really serves a small group of citizens, most of whom don't live in this county. Now, we don't want to be really provincial about this, but the fact is that the county residents proportionally don't really use this park. The other issue, which is really important, which was brought up in the context of Mr. Hensley's letter today, is that Ag and Open Space Policy Number 30, which really does discuss the county's policy. That's the one place where specifically the county has expressed a policy. And the policy is, because it's so environmentally degrading, we want to prohibit its use and not allow new uses. So this deserves a lot of careful consideration, and I submit to you that returning this back to a kind of use that doesn't allow motorized vehicles, doesn't allow off-highway vehicles, is much more consistent with this policy than to write a blank check for state parks to continue in ways that they see fit.
Are you just about finished up?
I'll just make my last point. The documents here are internally inconsistent. Earlier, Ms. Lee explained that the entire county property is now designated for OHV use. On page 5 of the conformity report, and this is in reference to the South Coast Area Plan Area Standards, it says, and I quote, ORV use of the county-held portion generally lying between the Sandy Beach and Dune Lakes shall be limited to the sand highway west of the Sandy Beach. This will minimize conflict with the Dune Lake properties to the east and the State Department of Parks and Rec Dune Preserve to the north. If you can see, it's not really in focus, but the sand highway, according to this map, and it's correct to the best of my knowledge, roughly bisects, further down. There. It's in the county property area. It essentially bisects the county property. So according to the South Area Planning Standards, Area Standards, that entire area to the east of the Sand Highway that bisects the county property should be off limit to OHV use. Now, I can't tell you that I know why there's this inconsistency, but I reviewed these documents, and there it is.
I do have to ask you to wrap up with just very, very limited comments, please.
Final sentence. I also found this map, which is from the Coastal Act Policy section, and I'm not sure where it came from. It says it's for alternatives, but if you see in this map, the county property is marked as a buffer zone, which indicates that there would be no OHV use in it. And so all three of these statements, complete OHV use, no OHV use, and half and half, is contained in county's policies and goals. And you can't make a conformity determination if the various elements are internally inconsistent.
Thank you. Dr. Langford, followed by Gordon Shore.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the County Planning Commission. Could I please ask that the last two maps be retained for my use as well?
Could you give us your name for the record,
I'm sorry.
Please?
Dr. Nell Langford. I own property on the Strand in Oceano, which is greatly affected by 2 million off-highway vehicle people every night. Okay, thank you. Thank you very much.
I do want to remind you of the time limit.
Okay. One of the reasons that a staging area had to be developed, if you can see on this map, there's an area in between the ocean and your land. How do you hide a natural preserve? I have watched it be hidden for 25 years. I am here to tell you that there is a natural preserve between your property and the ocean, and it extends from the toe of the foredunes in front of your land to the ordinary high water mark, and extends all that full length of your land, and then it goes all the way to the creek with the majority of the natural preserve going to the north. You will not find this on many of your maps because it's deliberately hidden. The reason it's hidden is that vehicles are prohibited in natural preserves. They're also not prohibited if they were to go in the other direction, the other side of the high tide line, because that's owned by state lands, and you would have to get a permit from state lands for that. So that's the reason why there had to be a permanent staging area, not the beach. That was never to be considered. I haven't forgot, but apparently the county has forgot. Also, the Oceano specific plan specifically calls for the development of Pier Avenue and a beach for our community. We deserve a beach in our community, and the county is taking it away. We're being sold out. You are selling Oceano's beach. No child can play on this beach in safety. Other types of recreation are strictly prohibited, as they are in your own land, when your own lease says that your land that you lease to the off-highway vehicle people is to be shared by all. It cannot be shared for all because it is too dangerous. And you've looked the other way all these years. It's time for the county to wake up and not sell us out. Thank you
very much. Gordon Shore. Mr. Shore will be followed by Eric Greening.
I'm Gordon Shore. I live on McCarthy Street in Oceano in the beach area, half a block inland from Nell's Beach House. Oceano facilities are severely taxed with the crowds that come in there now on the weekends with off-roaders and campers on the holidays and weekends. And I frequently hear sirens where they go to rescue the people who have tumbled in the dunes. And occasionally I see a fire truck go down there. So we have a lot of drain on our facilities because of the crowds there. And I fear that deeding some land to the off-roaders would encourage more off-road use, and we really don't want to encourage it. Also, I would like to see, if you do go ahead and sell the land, I'd like to see some conditions put on there that do a southern access or generate some revenue to Oceano to help offset some of the additional expenses they get. So we hope someday they'll get rid of the beach vehicles. And I think if the county loses control over its land, then it will never have any control over its use. So I thank you for your consideration.
Thank you very much, Mr. Shore. Eric Greening, followed by Andrew Christie.
Thank you. And if you can show the central part of that. I am Eric Greening. That the county has neglected its responsibilities on its property to date is not a convincing argument for forfeiting forever its present opportunity to do so. Its failure to implement Open Space Policy 3A1 is one facet of a broader dereliction in implementing the entire open space element, which has been in effect since 1998. But we were assured this morning that the conservation element update now underway will remedy that dereliction. What's on the screen is from Nell Langford's basement, and apparently it was part of a county staff report from the early 1990s. The upper large dark area is the Dune Preserve. We presently have an 8-acre stake therein, and as a whole, it would easily qualify as part of our network of major ecosystems. There are dark blobs southward across the county lands that appear to be exclosures. Have these ever been mapped or protected by either the county or the state? Are they nodes in the network of major ecosystems? Relative to how vehicles are accessing our county lands, I call your attention to the dark area along the coast called Dune Preserve Exclosure, 160 feet by 2,000. Whether adjacent or surrounded private property owners have been notified of this hearing. They absolutely must be notified prior to any hearing on the sale of the land that encompasses and adjoins them. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Andrew Christie, and then the last speaker slip I have is for Jim Hill.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Andrew Christie. I am Chapter Director for the Sierra Club, speaking on behalf of our 2,500 members in San Luis Obispo County. We concur with the analysis of Mr. Nifisi and Mr. Greening, and I think we need to go back to the excellent question that Commissioner Rose asked at the long-ago beginning of this hearing: what would happen if the state didn't buy this land, the county didn't sell it? That goes directly to the question of CEQA, which in your project description states CEQA applies only to projects which have the potential for causing a significant effect on the environment. Well, the equivalent of a no-project alternative on this project would have a very significant effect on the environment, quite likely. If the county did nothing, the lease would expire. The ownership of the land would revert. The 500-plus acres would no longer be part of the Oceano Dunes State Vehicular Recreation Area, and the county could theoretically choose to activate its open space policy, as you saw earlier, which is not friendly to the concept of off-road vehicles on county land. All that would, in fact, have a significant effect on the environment. The point that Mr. Nifisi was about to make on this map, I would like to underscore. The primary conclusion of your staff report is that the use of the properties is not proposed to change from the current use of the Dunes Preserve and the off-road recreation vehicle riding area. In this map, which is actually reproduced twice in coastal plan policies, the downward slanting crosshatching is indicated as the OHV use area. The upward slanting crosshatching is the buffer area, which goes, as you can see, from AG Creek all the way down to the southern border of the county property. Now, I don't spend a lot of time out at the off-road vehicle area due to personal pain at seeing that happening, but I'm willing to bet that that land indicated as buffer is not probably being used as buffer right now by state parks. The point being, you've got this map, and Bob put the color one up there. The current map that's the last page of your staff report today, in which what should be orange but here is coming out kind of gray in the middle, is the county property, which on the previous map from the coastal plan policies is indicated as a buffer zone. And I don't know if you can see there, but it's clear on your actual printed page. It's been labeled riding area, going from the top of the orange area down into the state park's property just below it. So what you have here, and as Mr. Greening has also pointed out, is a number of extreme discrepancies from maps and descriptions, depending on which ones you read and which county documents you go to, which would all combine to indicate that you're not in a position to find conformity with the general plan for this project at this time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Question for Mr. Christie. Where did you get that, not the last map, but your first map with the cross hatches? Where did that thing come from?
That is page 319 and also page 316 from County Plan Policies Revision, or I'm sorry, Coastal Plan Policies Revision of June 2004.
That might be in the information that we were given this, today after. No, it's not. Okay. Thank you. The next and last speaker I have is Mr. Hill, who's been waiting patiently for quite a while.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. Jim Hill from Oceano. I'm the president of the Oceano Community Services District Board. Before the county goes forward with a proposed sale and loses its best opportunity to plan for the future and actually mitigate some adverse impacts in the community of Oceano that are well enumerated in the Oceano-specific plan, traffic, parking, sand, trash, lack of restroom facilities in the community, we would urge you to please condition the sale on securing an ongoing source of funds to mitigate those impacts in the community of Oceano. We've heard of the millions of people that come here, the undeniable economic benefit to the neighboring cities, Grover Beach, Pismo Beach, Arroyo Grande. We're glad that they have those benefits. Unfortunately, Oceana has no ability to collect any sales tax or bed tax or any other means to mitigate the impact of the several million people that come to visit this area every year. So we're the sole community that has no ability to clean up or to provide restrooms or anything like that for the many people that come to our area. Superintendent Zilke of the State Park has done a good job, but his authority is limited to only the park property. And he cannot help out in the community of Oceano, to help mitigate the perhaps such as a dollar a car a number that we put out for purposes of discussion. From the park entry fee could be negotiated, but we would urge you to help negotiate with the state and the county and the other multiple jurisdictions that operate in Oceano to provide us some ability to mitigate the impact of this going forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for waiting around most of the day. Seeing no other speakers, I will bring it back to the commission. Are there questions of staff?
Excuse me, Madam Chair. Would it be proper for the appellant to make concluding remarks?
Oh.
Brief concluding remarks.
I'm sure it is appropriate. Mr. Bross, can we agree to 3 minutes? This is your opportunity to make some closing remarks, and we would appreciate it.
I'd just like to thank all of you for hearing the appeal and thank the people who showed up. I didn't touch on the environmental issues. I thought there were people that were more capable than me. However, I live that environment. I'm down at the estuary every morning. I'm a birder. And I must say that the OHV does their best to try to protect it. However, those vehicles are coming by. They set up a boundary there. You know, this is not it doesn't look like a real El Nino year, but you can't tell. We may get one big one like we did in 82. All those barriers will come down and the estuary will be overrun. The cars will be there. We'll be business as usual. I just ask all of you to think hard on the big scene. Thank you.
Thank you very much, sir. Okay. Back to the commission. Commissioner Wyatt, you had to start with you.
Yeah, thanks. I do have a few questions. First of all, I've heard some suggestions that we attach some kind of conditions to the approval, and I'd just like to direct the question to Mr. McNulty. Is that
That's fine, certainly.
For us to do?
Yeah.
Some kind of recommended conditions that there be some mitigation funding, or is there a way for us to do that appropriately?
I'm Tim McNulty with the County Council's office. The Planning Commission is hearing an appeal from a determination by the Planning Department, or the Planning Director, I guess the Planning Director, that the sale of the property to the state would be consistent with the county's plans and policies. So I think what the Planning Commission ought to be trying to resolve is whether or not it agrees with the determination of the Planning Director that the sale is consistent with the various plans and policies that apply to the general plan to this property, or whether it disagrees with that. I suppose you could come up with something where you would assert that if these list of things happened over here, then the sale would be consistent with general plan policies, and if it didn't or they didn't, then it wouldn't be. And I don't see any reason why you couldn't do something like that. Whatever you do, if you do something unusual like that, we ought to have some set of findings to go along with it so that everyone understands how you got to the conclusion that you get to. And perhaps that would be best done if we see the item and allowed the staff a chance to try to put together that so that there's a good record to explain your determination regarding consistency.
Thank you. A few more questions. I just find it kind of interesting that the people trust the county to solve some problems here that they have not for 25-year period of this lease. So I'm kind of interested. How long have the vehicles been allowed to drive off-road?
According to the staff report, since like the 30s.
What did he say? Since the 30s? Okay. So I guess that's an interesting one, but I suppose better to keep it more local if something is to be solved. Is that what I understand from people? That a solution would be easier, presumably locally, than at state level, even though it hasn't been found in all of these years? Okay, just checking to make sure I'm clear enough on that one. I see some inconsistencies in the plan, as I think have been noted here, pointed out several times. Between this, I think Commissioner Christie mentioned access and environmental protections, and I think we're going to see that. We do see that again and again and again. I don't know, what do we do about it? We recognize they're there.
Internal inconsistencies in the county's policies prevent the Planning Commission from reaching a determination about whether or not the sale conforms with the general plan. So to answer that question, you'd first have to resolve whether you too believe that there were internal inconsistencies in the county's policies. And if you did, then I would agree that it would be difficult to find conformity. I don't know that you should take necessarily on face value the argument that there are internal inconsistencies without having your staff at least present those to you in a way that you can see how they may or may not fit together in some form that you haven't been presented with yet.
I wouldn't so much phrase it as internal inconsistencies with the general plan, so much as there are competing inconsistencies with general plan policies and this particular proposal. In other words, it's consistent with some policies in the general plan, but it's clearly inconsistent with some other policies of the general plan. And so I'm curious to see, and I think Commissioner Wyatt was curious to see, how much latitude do we have in terms of finding general plan conformity or not based on which general plan policies we give more weight or credence to relative to their consistency or inconsistency?
Well, if the Planning Commission majority were to conclude that there are even some general plan policies with which the proposal appears to be inconsistent, then it could reach that conclusion. I haven't heard a discussion yet about whether the Planning Commission agrees with the testimony that it heard on that or whether there's more evidence that needs to be presented before it can reach that conclusion.
Further questions down this? Not to yet. My right?
I had a couple of questions, and I just want to be clear on this. It's the State Department of Parks and Recreation who currently manages the park, its day-to-day operations, correct?
Yes.
And who is the permit holder? I understand that the Coastal Commission granted the permit. It's actually the commission's permit, not the county's. But is the county the permit holder, or is the State Department of Parks and Recreation Department, the holder of the permit?
California Department of Parks and Rec.
Okay. So if the lease expires, could the county allow the Department of Parks and Recreation to continue to manage the park at its existing level under its existing permit if we allowed the lease to expire?
I would love to take a stab at that,
okay.
But I think it would be better if Linda or Karen took a stab at that from okay. General Services.
Okay.
I understand you, I'm Karen Medellina with the Department of General Services. If I understand your question correctly, you're asking if the county allows the lease to expire, could we allow the state to continue to use the property?
Yes.
I don't believe so, because what we would need is some type of an agreement, and I'm looking at county council because of some of the things that we need to have in place, such as, you know, liability concerns and indemnification concerns, things of that sort. So whatever relationship we have with whatever party is going to need to have a contractual relationship.
Okay. So if that were to happen, if the lease were to expire and therefore parks could no longer operate and manage that property as part of their larger park holdings, is this the only entranceway to the off-road beach vehicle recreational area?
My understanding is there's two, correct?
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So it would not shut down all use of the park for vehicles. It would just eliminate use of vehicles on the county-owned portion.
Theoretically.
Of the area. Okay. And my next, thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And then my next question is either for staff or county council, whoever wants to take it. Mr. Nafisi made the point that in his opinion that the county is the proper lead agency to make the determination on whether or not this proposal or this determination requires environmental review. And I'm just curious as to, I thought it was county staff who had made that determination that it didn't require environmental review, and I'm wondering, was it Parks or was it county staff?
Matt Jansen, planning staff. It's the state that made the CEQA determination of exemption. And then The county environmental coordinator reviewed that exemption, had a discussion with the state staff member that was in charge of that review, and came to the conclusion that we could also, at the local level, use it. And that's what we've selected to do to date.
So we concurred.
We were requesting
it
back
this way. It was
one that
Mr. Christie had passed on down there, and it raised a question that I have, that if this in fact is what it purports to be, it's something of off-road vehicle use areas. It's a map 2 on page 319 of the coastal plan policies, and to me it's got this, then he showed it to us, and as a couple other speakers I think tried to show us the same thing, that this is referred to as a buffer area. And I got to ask, what's a buffer area? I think I know what it is, but anybody want to help with that? In the context of this document.
It's a good question, and I'll give it a try. This is a tough one for us because clearly the map as part of the LCP shows this proposed sale area as a buffer area, and it's not specifically defined what that buffer area is in the area plan, but I think most people in the room would agree that buffer means that it's an area that's between one intense use mm-hmm. and one less intense use. Now, we have a problem in that the coastal development permit issued in 1982 by the Coastal Commission to state parks allows for complete and absolute, well, not absolute, but complete, almost complete use of this area for off-road vehicle use. That permit was granted in early 1982. It was amended later in 1982 to move the fence, I believe, even further eastward towards Oso Flacco Lake, which increased the size of the off-road vehicle use area. And then around the same time, of course, I wasn't here then, but around the same time, we were drafting this portion of our LCP, and it was soon thereafter that the Coastal Commission approved and certified our LCP showing this buffer area. But clearly it's in direct conflict with what the Coastal Commission allowed to occur there, but it is a tough one for us.
Well, since what I've heard you say that this is in fact a valid map, and it does appear to conflict with this proposed continuing use, so then I would submit that we do have a very critical inconsistency. I mean, to me, some of the policies are a little, as Ms. Christie is pointing out, we have contradictory policies, and we have that all over. We try to preserve the scenic view sheds and stuff, but recognize that people have the right to build their house, and, you know, your house is maybe not the prettiest thing that I look at, and you probably think the same about my house, but we have to work those two things in. And here's a map that says, no, this is a buffer area, and I, like you, assume it's not the off-road vehicle use area. And so we have a proposed sale that's going to allow what's continuing to, what is going on there now, to continue, when presumed so. So going back to Mr. Christie's no project alternative, which I don't know that that's where we're going to end up if we don't renew this lease. And again, we are not going to do that. That's obviously the Board of Supervisors. But sitting here in our own little small little job, is this consistent with our general plan? And I would say, based on this map, no.
For what it's worth, if I could, a follow-up comment. And I realize that we have lines on a map and they're certified, and that's important. I'm not going to try to say they're not. But the truth of the matter is that ever since the Coastal Commission issued a permit allowing the use of the area and the fact that we have a certified LCP and map that shows that it's a buffer area, we've been intending to change that map ever since. again, I offer it for what it's worth.
D-
attention.
Mr. Jensen, is this permit reviewed annually by the Coastal Commission?
Yes.
Has this inconsistency between the map and the permit ever been brought up to the Coastal Commission that you know of?
Not that I've been a party to, but I would be surprised if they weren't not aware of it.
Okay.
I just have some, I guess I see this much more simplistically. The general plan conformity concept is that the use is not changing and therefore things are compliant. I think that's absolutely true, but I think that our use is totally inconsistent with all of our policies, and we've been given reams of paper to show that. And I guess as one who likes to keep things local, I, even though we certainly have been approached by the state to sell this property, and we look at things, and rightfully so, as to, you know, cost and expense and revenues, I am comfortable in not finding.
Is the county who makes those CEQA determinations? I think if the county does want to go ahead with this sale, which personally I think is ill-advised, but that question really isn't before us today, but that if the county does want to proceed with sale of this property, that CEQA review is not only, you know, appropriate, I think it's, you know, required by law. So I'm willing to go with the inconsistency determination that the chair brought up.
Is there, when does this go to the board? I think somewhere in here we have a date.
I'm sorry.
I think maybe Karen.
We do have a tentative date. Again, I'm Karen Madalena, Department of General Services. We do have a tentative date of March 6th set for a hearing. Now, the reason I say tentative is it depends on the state and when we receive an offer. And I mean, there's timing issues that could bump that date, but at this present time, that's the date.
When you say bump the date, could it be sooner?
No.
Okay. Thank you. The reason I ask that is I'm not exactly sure how we proceed.
Let me throw it a moment.
But oh, good. Go ahead.
I move that we uphold the appeal of the planning director's decision that this proposed sale is in conformity with the general plan, and hold that it is not in conformity with the general plan based on the coastal plan policies. Map 2 shows this as a buffer area, and the continued operation of it as a off-road vehicle area is inconsistent with that coastal plan policy.
Second.
Now, granted, we could probably throw in a whole... So, discussion here. We could probably throw in a whole bunch of other stuff, and I'm not really sure we want to make it too greasy. Well, let's slide through its own, but, you know, somebody else has got an additional thing that we ought to add to this.
Well, it seems fairly clear that this OSP 30, mm-hmm. number one, that suggests that the county work with other agencies to encourage the prohibition of blah, blah, blah.
Right, but then again, we have other policies, too, that talk about other things, so...
Where it is conflicts with adopted master plans, and so we've got this coastal permit, which is not a master plan, but it's kind of like it.
So you think it's cleaner not to include too many
right.
conflicts in the most...
I'm saying
as you will.
Number 30 isn't that clean.
I think if we go with the existing motion, probably all of the folks that made the points that they made today will reiterate those points on at the board, and they'll have the discretion to make their determination about consistency or not. But I think sending the message to the board that this commission, I get the sense, is that we're going to have a unanimous agreement here, that we unanimously found this inconsistent with the general plan, I think that'll be a pretty strong signal that will cause them to look more deeply into the specifics.
I guess I'm not that. The reason I asked the date of the Board of Supervisors hearing was I'm not convinced of that. And I thought it might give us an opportunity to expand upon the CEQA review, expand upon the inconsistencies that we see, and at least, and maybe it's only my own feelings, of the importance of local control as to our own policies and programs and how we proceed with them.
So then
again,
you're
that's not on the table.
I said that, and I guess my comments then have to be, you know, I would prefer not to support the motion because I don't believe it gives us the opportunity to really express our views on this.
Okay, well, then wait a minute. I want to fully understand Commissioner Rappa because I'm, you know, now my brain is split in half. So, Commissioner Rappa,
you're leaving yourself wide open.
When I heard you earlier say that you felt it was fairly clear that the planning, that this proposal is not consistent with the general plan, you don't want to support the motion because you want to bring this back to the commission to have more time to flesh out all the ways in which it's inconsistent with the general plan and all of the other associated problems?
No, I think we've given plenty of direction. My only reason to bring it back to us would be a letter that would support our position,
okay,
that would go into, because
right,
it
just
is...
just like we did.
Just like we've done for the last several hours.
Well, for the previous item. For the previous
correct
item. Exactly. So
correct,
same process.
So to get your vote, all it would take would be a letter?
That's for the letter. For next time.
But I think she wants to include more issues.
No, that's fine. If let me make it... I apologize for the sort of... can staff draft a letter that fully expresses the consensus of the commission?
Yes.
And doesn't need to come back to us.
Well,
to all this.
And that way the motion passes as opposed to leaving the action open. I mean, then
but I don't think it comes back to us. Then does it come back?
And the motion to require it to come back to us.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, all right. The maker of the motion.
No, I'm not going to do it. You amend it. You want
to... You made it. You have to amend it, right?
I didn't make the motion.
You made it.
No.
I made the motion, but if someone wants to offer an amendment to the motion,
that
we continue the item for final determination pending the writing of a letter, that's okay with me.
Yeah.
Isn't that what you've done then?
I see you guys are difficult.
Okay, I'm going to amend the motion then. Can I amend the motion? The second. I would like to amend the motion to include direction to staff to bring a letter back to this commission on a consent agenda for its approval. And the letter would fully describe the consensus of this commission.
On the action taken.
On the action taken today to go forward to the Board of Supervisors.
To February 8th.
Correct.
Is there a second to the amendment? Yes, I'll second it.
Okay.
All in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. Now, the motion before us as amended. Do we need a roll call or can we just roll call, I suppose?
Commissioner Christie?
Aye.
Commissioner Wyatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairperson Rappa?
Yes. Oh, my goodness,
yay,
we beat that one up, didn't we?
Okay.
All right.
I move that we accept all materials received today into the public record.
Second.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All are accepted.
Madam Chair, before you adjourn the meeting.
Yes, sir.
I would just like to point out the logistics of bringing something back to you on February 8th. We will issue core agenda that will have the Cambria item and this item on it. The main agenda has already gone out. It's already been posted on the website.
Hey, we got it in our pie.
Yeah, and you've asked us to write a letter on this item, and we will do that, but you may not see it until right before the meeting.
I think that's fine. Or okay, the hearing date for the Board of Supervisors is March 6th, right? We have two meetings in February, don't we?
No, but there's lead time for preparing board items, and we would want the Planning Commission's letter in the board.
Oh, that would, so would we, I think.
Yeah, so if that's why we didn't suggest February 22nd, because I think that's after the time, or very close to the time that we have to prepare, or General Services has to prepare their board items, and they're both nodding at me. So I just wanted to make sure your expectations were realistic about how much lead time you'll have with these items.
Okay.
We'll get it the
and that the public understands that the core agenda, the revised agenda showing these two items, won't probably be posted on the website, but it will be posted to meet proper public notice in three public places prior, at least 72 hours prior to your February 8th meeting.
Great. Okay, and anyone here today can certainly call to receive that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
And the letter, you'll get it at least the night before the meeting.
I'm looking at Matt and Marcia, but I would say that that would be my hope. Yeah, I get a thumbs up.
Okay.
Well,
At least, at the very latest, and we would actually want to get it to you before then if we could.
Right.
Thank you. If there is no other business, we will adjourn.
Okay. See you in 2 weeks.